Sam Cedar.
The destiny of America is always safer in the hands of the people than in the conference rooms of any elite.
Sam Cedar.
They are unanimous in their hate for me, and I welcome their hatred.
We must guard against the acquisition of unwarranted influence, whether sought or unsought, by the military-industrial complex.
The Majority Report with Sam Cedar.
Ever get the feeling you've been cheated?
It is Thursday, October 2nd, 2025. My name is Emma Vigeland, in for Sam Cedar, and this is the five-time award-winning Majority Report. We are broadcasting live steps from the industrially ravaged Gowanus Canal in the heartland of America, downtown Brooklyn, USA. On the program today, Ryan Grimm will be with us to give us an update on the Gaza Samud flotilla. A drop site editor was sailing on one of the 44 boats. And later in the show, Natasha Hakimi Zapata will be with us to talk about Corbyn's new party in the UK and why Labour is falling apart. Also on the program, Israel has illegally intercepted almost every humanitarian flotilla ship sailing to Gaza, except one, according to reports. If true, this would be the first time a humanitarian ship reached Palestinian waters since Israel implemented a naval blockade on Gaza in 2009. Just a reminder that history did not start on October 7th, okay? Italy's largest union, with over 5 million members, calls for a general strike in support of the flotilla. Shutdown day two. Trump threatens more federal workforce layoffs if Democrats don't agree, with no negotiation, to the Republican continuing resolution. Trump starts by freezing billions of dollars for blue states and uses government websites to blame the left, which is illegal under the Hatch Act, by the way. The shutdown halted the official jobs numbers, but ADP releases downward August revisions and awful September numbers showing thousands of losses. The Trump administration has brought its family separation policy back, and it's more severe than ever, per a Guardian investigation. Trump has pulled 42,000 federal officers working on crimes like human trafficking into ICE operations, per totals compiled by Mother Jones.
Yeah, get out of those luxury hotels. Nothing going on bad in there.
Yeah.
Go look into the kitchens.
I would know. I would know.
Get out of the luxury hotels. Go into the Home Depots.
Miller, Bondi, and Hegseth head down to Memphis to rally cops and troops ahead of the occupation. The footage of Stephen Miller trying to rile people up is something else. Not an alpha male. And lastly, Planned Parenthood has been forced to close its two remaining clinics in Louisiana. But Ezra Klein says we should cede on this issue. Can't get over that. All this and more on today's Majority Report. Welcome to the show, everybody. It's an Majority Report Thursday. Hello to Matt. Hello to Brian. Great show for you today, and I'm glad we were able to get Ryan to come on today to speak about the flotilla. We're still getting information coming in and out, but at the very least, Israel illegally intercepted 43 out of the 44 ships in international waters, and one we don't know yet. And we'll be talking to Ryan about what he's heard and what DropSite has been doing in terms of their excellent reporting on this. But we are officially in day two of the government shutdown. As a reminder, the longest shutdown ever was in Trump's first term. It was 34 days, and we'll see how long this one goes. Republicans really at Trump's directive, are refusing to negotiate with Senate Democrats despite needing 60 votes to get this continuing resolution through. Non-essential services have begun to shut down. There have been furloughs at places like the SEC. Other agencies like the FTC are not able to do their work. ICE is still running, though. Ken Klippenstein reported that they prepared for this, so that, no, don't worry, everybody. ICE is still operating and breaking up families and shoving grandpas to the ground and breaking their bones. So we can rest easy knowing that that is still going on.
Would have been nice for Congress to have asserted, the Democrats in Congress to have asserted their authority over such sort of spending measures before ICE got an FBI-sized budget to carry themselves through this exact moment.
But... Exactly. I mean, this is what we were saying in the spring. They could have used this leverage in the spring to curtail the explosion of the budget for the modern-day Gestapo in the United States.
To say ResVot can't just project 2025 things that your Congress members voted on. That's not the executive branch's function.
And think about this for a second. How much does it undercut their negotiating power right now? When, in the spring, you had... Can you clarify if it was 10 Democrats? I would love just that number on the 10 Senate Democrats, I believe, that capitulated and voted on this. We know that Schumer and Gillibrand were two of them, because, and Fetterman, of course, but we were speculating at the time that you had these two New York Democratic senators. Really, the reporting was that Gillibrand was screaming at the caucus saying, we can't shut the government down. We have to, it was 10? Yeah. Okay, great. We have to shut, we can't shut the government down. She was yelling at the rest of the members. And why would that be the case? Well, one, they have this like blinkered idea, to borrow a word from Sam, that you just got to lay down in the grass and
play dead,
basically.
As you do when you're being attacked by a bear. That's advice from James Carville, who is, by the way, Palantir advisor.
Yeah, and hasn't been relevant in elections since before I was born. But, you know, that's like the best case scenario. But what in reality I think it is that Wall Street hates a government shutdown. It's not a coincidence, in my view, that the two New York Democrats in the Senate were in lockstep on this front, because it disrupts the market. You have things like what I mentioned in headlines, that we don't have the jobs report that came out. You have to have estimates from private entities like the ADP to see how this data, what this data actually indicates. Inflation data is not going to be able to come out. It's been disrupted. So it also indicates stability, and the markets begin to tank, and that's who they represent. But what they allowed is the terrorization of communities across the country, and the largest transfer of wealth in maybe 100 years from the to the top 1%. And so, by the way, all polling shows that the public will blame the government shutdown on Republicans, and the margins on those polls have been in double digits. There's no ambiguity here. But Trump is making threats because he is afraid that this is going to hurt him. This is what he posted this morning on Truth Social. I have a meeting today with ResVot. He is of Project 2025 fame, to determine which of the many Democrat agencies, most of which are a political scam, he recommends be cut, and whether or not those cuts will be temporary or permanent, I can't believe the radical left Democrats gave me this unprecedented opportunity. They are not stupid people, so maybe this is their way of wanting to quietly and quickly make America great again. The president does not have the authority to eliminate agencies. Congress creates agencies, so he's lying about that. He's bluffing.
But not yet.
And by the way, remember when Trump and Republicans kept denying that they were a part of Project 2025, and you had some people in media who were really like on board and believing them? Trump says he's not involved in this Heritage Foundation Project 2025 thing, despite his staffers all being involved in it and it looking like a blueprint for his agenda as president. So why not trust the most notorious liar in politics?
And why would you think that the Heritage Foundation wouldn't have a huge say in a Republican administration anyway?
Well,
you know.
It's
anyway, you can,
getting back
next
to...
Next time.
No, yeah, yeah, try again. This whole political commentary thing. But Trump is already doing these mass firings. He's already doing it. These buyouts, these resignations, they're already in process. And the easiest thing the Democrats are going to be able to extract if they get something in these negotiations and don't cave is the extension of the Affordable Care Act tax credits. They expire at the end of this year. And if they expire, premiums are going to skyrocket for folks on Obamacare. And Republicans are actually not, I think at least Thune and non-Trumpy Republicans, congressional Republicans, frontline Republicans are terrified of this prospect because they timed in their budget the Medicaid cuts, the bulk of them, to happen after 2026, after the midterms, because they know how much this is going to hurt people. But if these ACA tax credits expire, that's immediate evidence of how they're hurting people. And so Democrats need to be asking for more rain and ice. Stop sending in the National Guard into our cities. They need to reach an agreement on Trump not rescinding federal funds that Congress has agreed to. This ACA subsidies thing is the bare minimum. But they're not even articulating that well, leadership at least. But there are people who are. And if you were like an alien that came down from another planet, and I guess for some reason you had like an understanding of electoral politics. Just run with this for a sec. Electoral.
I mean, if I went into
politics, yeah.
If I went into another alien world, I would look at their political system.
Right. Okay. Well, it's just this is a very strained hypothetical, but it's like, say you could understand politics, and you were like, who? But you didn't know for some reason who the leaders of the Democratic Party were. Okay. See, Brian's like, shut up, Emma.
So you're,
stop
I'm on
trying.
Your side.
Okay.
Say you're part of
right.
Say you're part of an advanced civilization that visits Earth, so clearly you're a communist.
Yes, obviously. I'm sticking with it. But if you saw this video, you would think that these two people were the leaders of the Democratic Party because they are the only people who know how to message, apparently. Here are Bernie Sanders and Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez explaining what is happening with the government shutdown.
Hey, everybody. I was walking here in Washington, D.C., and who did I bump into? One of my favorite members of the United States Congress, Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez.
And one of my favorite senators.
All right. Anyhow, as everybody knows, we are now in a government shutdown. Republicans are attacking Alexandria, attacking me. Why didn't you vote for this clean CR to keep the government open?
Well, there's nothing clean about it. This is one of the dirtiest tricks that is being pulled on the American people right now. Starting today, October 1st, and throughout the rest of the month, Americans across this country are going to start getting notifications that their insurance premiums are up to doubling. We're talking about...
Say that again.
Your insurance, your monthly insurance premiums are going to double for millions of people across the country.
At a time when we're already paying by far the highest prices in the world for health care, at a time when people can't afford it right now. So what happens?
That means people getting bankrupt over chemotherapy, people going to the pharmacy and not being able to get their insulin. And frankly, it means a lot of Americans are going to be in danger. And Republicans want us to rubber stamp that. So what are we going to say to that, Bernie?
Well, I'll tell you, it's not only be in danger. Let's be clear. And it doesn't make me happy to have to say this. But there have been studies out there that when you combine doubling premiums for the ACA and then throwing 15 million people off of Medicaid and the ACA, the result is, according to studies at Yale and the University of Pennsylvania, 50,000 low-income, working-class Americans die every single year. All right? If you don't have the money to go to a doctor and you're sick, you die. And that's what we're looking at. That's what this clean bill is about.
Mm-hmm. And so Republicans want us to rubber stamp that. And we're saying no. We need to stand up for the American people. We need to stand up for our healthcare system. And if they want our votes, they need to make sure that we're protecting every American and making sure that we can do what we can to continue to make healthcare accessible, affordable, as we work to make it a human right for all.
Right. So let me just back that up. Remember, right now, our healthcare system is broken. Right now, we're the only major country on earth not to guarantee healthcare to all people. And these guys want to make it even worse. We're not going to let that happen.
No, we're not.
Thank you.
Onward.
It's refreshing.
So, like, there's all this talk about, you know, you get from people saying, well, if you don't like old people in Congress, then what do you say about Bernie Sanders? Well, if you're a senator can do a straight 2.5 minutes or 3 minutes without a cut talking about this stuff, then they pass. That's the test.
Completely. I mean, I was thinking that exact same thing, how vibrant he is. It's amazing. And how there were a lot of folks worried about that heart attack. Well, He's still kicking and sounds as good as ever, honestly.
But we're talking about hundreds of dollars a month for people on their health insurance if they're on the exchanges, and without those subsidies. That, like you said, that's if you need health insurance. Because that's if I was like 25 again and I'm looking at that and I don't have a job, I'm thinking, oh, well, I'm going to go without health insurance.
Right.
Unless you need it.
Yeah. And the central claim from the Republicans to combat this is a complete lie. They are saying that Democrats want illegals, in their framing, to have access to this. Statutorily, the Affordable Care Act, even if you were to buy it out of pocket as an undocumented immigrant in this country, you are legally not allowed to. Immigrants who have no documentation in the United States subsidize our social safety net because with taxes, they pay into it, but they cannot get anything out of it. They are lying to you.
People ask
it's the reverse.
People are going to ask themselves, like, am I a undocumented person? No. Okay. What's going to happen to my health insurance rates? They're still going to go through the roof. And you have the Republicans saying these just Nazi lies. Oh, we have to look into this infrastructure project in New York and New Jersey because of to check if it's DEI or not. That's just appealing to racists. That's a Klan appeal. The exact same thing with this. You think your services in America, your healthcare services suck because of immigrants? Are you stupid? Like, I mean, Republican voters are. Democrats need to be forceful in saying, like, no, people, the general person is not persuaded by this just Nazi lie, Nazi playbook type lie, where we're going to blame the failure of a state, of a government controlled by billionaires on immigrants, like people that are, I frankly, like you say, either propping them up by being having their wages garnished despite not being able to take benefits, or even like, you know, actually doing a lot of the labor in this country.
Yeah. And unfortunately, though, we can't really expect that right now from Democratic leadership. And Hakeem Jeffries, when he's been going on these media hits, he'll talk about affordability and mention the healthcare piece. But he lingers on this racist meme that Trump posts, that we posted, that we spoke about.
Say it to my face.
It's driving me insane. This era of celebrity Democrats centering themselves is over. You need to get on camera and redirect, as Zoran Mamdani does, and as Bernie said, they're attacking, the Republicans are attacking me, and then they go into the spiel and speak about how people are being materially affected.
Yeah.
The era of the liberal, celebrity, self-centered Democrat who's there to own Donald Trump and get into some beef with him, it's over. And it's ineffective. And it's creating oxygen for the Republicans to distract from this. But here's versus Nancy Pelosi being asked about how AOC Republicans are doing her a favor to a degree, saying that she's responsible for these negotiations. And Chris Hayes asked her about this the other night. And she was like, yeah, come talk to me directly if that's the case. She's trying to position herself as more of a leader than Schumer and Jeffries, which I like. Of course,
if she's going to be positioned as a leadership, the Democrats need to give her leadership powers.
Right. But listen to how Nancy Pelosi, who Ryan Grimm will be on with us shortly, his book, We've Got People, speaks about how they had a, you know, very difficult kind of contentious situation because Pelosi was, you know, not in favor of AOC's more grassroots energy and things like that. This is what she says when asked about AOC's role in these shutdown talks.
There was a thought from the Republicans that AOC is directing this, and she said that senators are welcome to go to her office directly. Is she driving that?
Why are you saying such a ridiculous thing?
I'm just quoting what AOC said. Yeah, she said go to her office directly. Do you think there's any credibility to that?
She's not directing this. She's wonderful. She's a real a team player and the rest of that. You started by saying Republicans say that she's directing it. She is not. Hakeem Jeffries is. And this takes a lot of experience, a lot of unity from the caucus in terms of the point of view. And that's what this is. She's an articulate spokesperson for her point of view. Hakeem Jeffries is leading this.
When you have to say it.
Yeah.
When you have to say it.
I mean, he's who you picked, but there's no confidence in his leadership, clearly.
And I mean, I've gotten many problems with Pelosi, but I mean, Pelosi would have been doing a better job than this right now. There's no question in my view. She's at least a partisan. Hakeem Jeffries is a fundraiser primarily. And the idea that Democratic leadership is spending any amount of time speaking about this meme, this is literally the first time most Americans are paying attention to anything Hakeem Jeffries is doing. Anything. You have a finite amount of time to show and media attention to show what you're going to do for the American people. And they are taking the bait or direct. I can't tell if they're just taking the bait or actively directing the conversation to the frickin' meme. But listen to J.D. Vance yesterday. This is what leadership has allowed them to do. Distract, more circus, more memes. Nothing but the material implications of what they're trying to do. Jeffries allows for this distraction. Here I give you the Vice President of the United States.
Good thing. On the Sobrero thing, I mean, Hakeem Jeffries said it was racist. And I know that he said that. And I honestly don't even know what that means. Like, is he a Mexican-American that is offended by having a sombrero meme? I mean, I saw one of the major TV stations put the meme up and then say, this is AI generated. And he had like the curly animated mustache too. It's like, do you really not realize the American people recognize that he did not actually come to the White House wearing a sombrero and a black curly animation mustache? Like, give the country a little bit of credit. We're all trying to do a very important job for the American people. The President of the United States likes to have a little bit of fun when he's doing it, and I think that's okay. I'll take one more question.
I know that Jeffries was the subject of the racist meme. I understand that. But as leader, you have a responsibility to represent the hundreds of millions of people who are going to be affected by this horrific Republican budget, and you have to use every opportunity to communicate that.
You get one quote in this.
They're ill-equipped.
This is from yesterday. AP, the Democrats embrace a shutdown fight in a rare moment of unity against Trump. We need unity, Pelosi says, right? So you get one quote, leader Jeffries. You're going to get one quote, and what's that going to be? In a press conference, Jeffries offered a harsh message to the president. What's that message?
What was it about?
The next time you have something to say about me, don't cop out through a racist and fake AI video. When I'm back in the Oval Office, say it to my face. And then what happened?
Was that four times he mentioned himself in one quote?
Then he got invited into the Oval Office, and Trump had Trump 2028 hats there, and he got a nice little photo op with Hakeem Jeffries, and we're where we are now. So, again, you had one opportunity to get a quote in a place like the AP, which is going to set the record across, because that's just reran and paper and paper and paper across the land.
Yeah.
And you made it about say it to my face and not Americans' health insurance premiums are going to double. That is from $350 to $700. Maybe mention that and not the personal slight against you and how people should take it.
Yep.
Like, I mean, it's
Zoran has been attacked in the most racist, vile ways, and you can, but he never lingers on it. Never, never. He had that one emotional speech where he spoke about those death threats, and that was it. He's always redirecting it back to what he's going to do for New Yorkers. You see the contrast in how Zoran messages things, AOC, Bernie, leftism versus this liberalism, a hollow ideology that is about individuals and markets and capital and is ill-equipped to handle the responsibility of beating fascism, because we can only do it as a collective. No one cares about your personal beef with Trump, and it's distracting from us all coming together to fight this.
He, in that mention, when he was talking about the racism, he says, Zohran said, on the people that I love, and I try not to talk about it, because the function of racism, as Toni Morrison says, is distraction. So maybe read Toni Morrison, who you claim, like, I imagine Hakeem Jeffries probably thinks he represents, like, the legacy of Toni Morrison or some shit. Read her.
Yeah. Also, say it to my face. Is this an 80s, like, John Hughes movie?
Yes. That's where Hakeem Jeffries heads at right now.
In a moment, we're going to be talking to Ryan Grimm, but first, a word from one of our sponsors. I don't know about you, but my social media feed is filled with all of these different health trends. Can red light therapy solve your skin? Should you be slamming olive oil shots? Well, the algorithm, you've got to give it a rest. Leave it to the professional and turn to healthcare professionals with ZocDoc. It's easy. You can find doctors that are right for you and instantly book an appointment. ZocDoc is a free app and website where you can search and compare high-quality in-network doctors and click to instantly book an appointment. ZocDoc lets you book in-network appointments with more than 100,000 doctors across every specialty. You can filter for doctors who are near you, take your insurance, and are a good fit for you. You can find the type of care you're looking for, from good bedside manner to fast wait times to doctors with the best listening skills. You can see their actual appointment openings, choose a time slot that works for you, and click instantly to book. Appointments made through ZocDoc also happen fast, typically within just 24 to 72 hours of booking. You can even get same-day appointments. I found my dentist, who I love, through ZocDoc, and it's the interface is just very intuitive. The fact that other doctors' offices don't have websites like this that are so easy is just like an indictment. But good for ZocDoc, because they have it figured out. You can see the calendar. You can do it online. You can input your information. It's as easy as it gets. I'd like to thank ZocDoc for sponsoring today's episode. Stop putting off those doctor's appointments and go to ZocDoc.com/majority to find and instantly book a top-rated doctor today. That's ZocDoc.com/majority. ZocDoc.com/majority. Link will be down below in the video and episode descriptions and at majority.fm. That's ZocDoc.com/majority. And you can download the ZocDoc app to sign up for free and book a top-rated doctor. ZocDoc.com/majority. Quick break, and when we come back, we'll be joined by Ryan Grimm. We are back, and we are joined once again by friend of the show, Ryan Grimm, co-founder and reporter at Dropside News, co-host of Counterpoints. Welcome to the show, Ryan.
Oh, thanks, Emma. How you doing?
I'm doing all right. Lots of news. I'm sure you're busy as well. And by the way, congrats on, you know, Dropside. It's moving on up. I mean, your reporting is really getting recognized, especially on the international stage right now, because you have an editor, Alex Colson, who is one of the 500 activists, lawyers, journalists, and more around that number, who were sailing on the Mediterranean Sea for over a month trying to break the siege with the Samud flotilla. Last night, Israel's Navy illegally intercepted these ships, except one as of the reporting right now. But Ryan, if you could just give us a recap of the last month and where things stand over the past 24 hours, after the past 24 hours.
Yeah, they left from Spain. So it's, you know, been quite a long, you know, several week long journey across the Mediterranean. Picked up another fleet basically in Tunisia. In Tunisia, one of their boats was hit by some type of Israeli drone strike that caused some, you know, mostly cosmetic, you know, significant but not, you know, not debilitating damage, and was there to send a message, you know, that that kinetic force was planned to be used against the boats in the flotilla. And, you know, throughout their journey, the Israeli Ministry of Foreign Affairs continued, you know, putting out baseless assertions that the flotilla was actually Hamas. Just in the last day or two, they put out what they said were never before revealed documents that they had obtained in 2021 and before that proved that Hamas had sponsored this flotilla, which is absurd on its face. Like, the flotilla was not organized in 2021. It quickly became clear they had actually tried to put these exact same documents out the last time Greta was on a flotilla, and there were all sorts of other, you know, self-contradictory elements to it. But what was concerning about the claims was not the substance of them, because everyone could see through that, but what it foreshadowed in terms of a potentially violent response. About a week ago, nine of the ships were attacked by what can only be Israeli drones. One of them completely disabled, had its, you know, mast destroyed. And the organizers were getting signals from around, from their sources and around Europe, that the next night was going to bring, you know, even more serious attacks, because nobody was seriously hurt, despite the nine ships, you know, being attacked by drones. And it was around then that the Italian Navy, you know, said it was going to send its ship alongside them. Spain then followed them and said that they were also going to send one. And so the attack that they were expecting the next night did not materialize. And I think that was a real consequence of the Italian Navy getting involved. Now, Meloni, the Italian Prime Minister, was highly critical of the flotilla, wanted nothing to do with it, had nothing but ill things to say about it. But because the Genoa dock workers and other unions were out in the streets demanding that Italy stand up for the flotilla, which had a number of Italian members of parliament on it, Meloni had no choice but to act. The Spanish and Italian ships that left, though, the flotilla when it got to what they call the Orange Zone. Orange Zone being this area roughly 90 to 110 nautical miles off of the Gaza shore, where Israel in the past has intercepted all of these flotillas. And so once they got there, these 40 plus ships were on their own. And then it was last night that all of them it's unclear what's going on with the last one.
Yes.
Right. It might be a technical malfunction with its ship's not moving and it hasn't moved for like 12 hours. So it's likely that crew has been taken into custody, but right. We don't know. Like it remains an open question. People are trying to track it and figure out what's going on.
I saw a reporting from The Guardian this morning that seemed to confirm at the very least that one boat, Mykonos, was reported to have escaped the blockade. Mm-hmm. And even if they were intercepted, which is obviously quite likely, this would still be, if they crossed a certain threshold, the first time that a humanitarian vessel has crossed into Gaza's nautical territory since 2009, which is when Israel implemented its naval blockade of Gaza. Another reminder to folks that, you know, Israel has basically been controlling Gaza's borders, land and sea for decades, and controlling the flow of trade, controlling what goes in and out of Gaza well prior to October 7th. So this is historic if they even got into the like territory of Gaza, Gaza's waters.
Right. And so our editor, Alex Colson, was on a ship called the Sirius. And, he and the ship, they live streamed both their CCTV footage as well as from his own phone, so that the world could see that this was a completely nonviolent action. In fact, when they got close to what they considered to be the orange zone, they actually filmed themselves like dumping all of their cooking kitchen knives, for instance, overboard. Anything that could be remotely misinterpreted as a threat to the Israeli military was tossed overboard. And they were trained in, you know, nonviolent response to the Israeli incursion. And as far as we could tell so far, we'll learn more when we can talk to Alex again on the other side, that we're not aware of any like major, you know, violent incidents.
That's good so far.
Yeah, they have said that the European and Americans will be kept for 72 hours and then deported to Europe. And so we'll continue to monitor that situation and see whether or not they abide by that.
And what's concerning a little bit, though, is that you have I was seeing that they may be held for a little bit longer because of Yom Kippur and the courts may be shut down. I'm not sure what the status of that is at this point, but let's just play a little bit of footage here from the flotilla. This is footage as Ryan was speaking about. I'm not sure who recorded this. This is from the Global Simud Flotilla's Instagram account itself, but of the IDF intercepting at least one of these ships. So it says, for more than 14 hours, heavily armed Israeli occupation forces intercepted flotilla vessels. And you see them approaching. Obviously heavily armed. These ships
were crewed.
Wait, what'd you say, Ryan?
Masked up.
Masked up, right.
Yeah, like ICE agents.
Exactly. They must be very proud. And, we're just kind of scrolling through. You can see them boarding. And this is some of the footage that Ryan was referencing. You mentioned earlier this strike on the... on one of the flotilla in Tunisia. This is not the first time that Israel has done this. They did this in, I believe, prior to Greta Thunberg boarding in a previous effort. They had bombed it as a show of force and a message. But like the fact that they can disable these flotilla boats without any casualties, the fact that they can be so targeted in their strikes on these boats, it's just another piece of, you know, a mountain of evidence that obviously they have the capacity to limit casualties in Gaza if they so choose. I mean, you see these drones that shot that doctor in the head the other day,
right?
A precision strike. You see that they have the ability to take over, like to blast Netanyahu's UN speech into Gaza, to take over their phones and intercept their communications. I mean, Anthony Lowenstein's book, The Palestine Laboratory, is so important here because it's basically 141 square miles of experiments of the most sadistic military technology possible, and they pretend like they can't be precise in any way when they can be the most precise of any military in history.
Right, yes. because they did manage to strike 9 of these ships plus in Tunisia, and without doing what they were nervous about doing, which is going over the line and killing somebody from Spain or Italy or the United States, which then ratchets up the diplomatic pressure that they would be under. Just the fact that they were attacking and setting fire to these boats, brought significant amounts of diplomatic blowback, even from, a country like Italy, where that has an extremely pro-Israel prime minister. So yeah, you're right. It does show that if they decide that they don't want to kill people, they do actually have the capacity to not kill people.
Gustavo Petro of Colombia expelled, I believe, in response to this, Israeli diplomats over the interception of the flotilla. Just as a contrast to the European governments, I think it's important to point that out. But can you shed any light on the decision of these European ship escorts to retreat once the said orange zone approached? Obviously, Maloney is far right and was not in favor of this. And then you have this Italy's largest union striking overnight in response to this. But talking about Spain and Greece and what their role is in this is interesting to me too.
There was some hope among some of those either on board or watching the flotilla that these ships would accompany them, all the way to the shores, effectively, and open and help to open up a humanitarian corridor. That wasn't their plan. I've seen people argue it both ways. On the one hand, say, "Well, this is just a stunt." They're just trying to, make their own domestic publics feel a little bit better about the unconditional fealty that they've given to Israel over the years. And so look, at least we're doing something. We're sending a, because they were very clear that it was they kept underlining that these are rescue ships, that they were not there to confront Israel. However, ships like the type of ship you sends its own message. They didn't send Coast Guard. They didn't send the Coast Guard, which, those are the kinds of vehicles you would send if it was just a rescue operation. Mm. So the fact that they sent actual, armed up military vehicles, naval ships, was a political signal as well. That, okay, we're going to say that this is a rescue effort and we're not going to go in beyond the orange zone. But the fact that they sent it out at all is something of a significant departure from the past.
Alex Colson, of DropSite, I saw in your guys' write-up of what's been happening, spoke about how the IDF was spraying the flotilla with something called skunk water. We have this short clip of Greg Stoker, who we've had on the show before. He was on the veterans boat, and he has a short footage he's ripping a cig in this, which is hilarious. But this is some footage of said skunk water, which Israel has used many times over the years against Palestinians. So you can see that yellow spray. All right, there. I'm just laughing at Greg. Being a legend, but. Can you explain that skunk water stuff and Israel's usage of it and what DropSite has found on that front?
Yeah, I mean it's a crowd control measure that Israel has been deploying for quite some time that has kind of an extra layer of sadism to it, that it is from everybody, I've never been around it, but everybody who describes it, it's just produces this utterly repulsive scent, just absolutely disgusting. And this is an unusual use for it in the sense that, where do you want the crowd to go? Like, is this, if it's crowd control and you're trying to make an area stink and make a bunch of people stink and get them out, get them to go from, the town square where they're protesting to somewhere else. That, okay, that's a use case for it. But they're on the boat. What are they going to do? Like jump in the sea? And yeah. and how does them jumping in the sea actually help the IDF get them into custody? So this felt more just like conspicuous sadism than anything related to any kind of operational strategy here.
And that's the other thing is that this is international waters. I mean, Israel is continuously asserting...
Your early point that this is illegal is a key one.
Yeah, can you expand on that? Because, I mean, this is like, it's just like taken as granted that, yeah, Israel should be able to do whatever the hell they want in international waters that are approaching the Gaza Strip.
And it's right. So, A, they have no authority whatsoever over them when they're not in Israeli waters, which they weren't anywhere close to. But B, as the organizers pointed out to the Israeli military over the PA, the International Court of Justice barred Israel from blocking humanitarian aid. The ICJ said that the world needs to flood aid into Gaza and that Israel must stop blocking the aid. So not only do they have no authority to board these vessels and arrest these people, they have been specifically barred from doing so by the International Court of Justice. Clearly, they have no intent. They had no intention of abiding by that order, though.
Very, very clearly. Ryan Grimm, thanks so much for coming on. Also on short notice, I appreciate it giving us a sense of what's happening. And, following Drop Site right now is essential. You guys do the best explainers, and you have somebody obviously on the ground reporting on this incredibly historic mission. Thanks so much, Ryan, for coming on today.
Thanks for the kind words, Emma. Very much appreciate it.
All right. Talk to you soon. Quick break. When we come back, we are going to be turning to the UK, speaking to Natasha Hakimi-Zapata, award-winning journalist, about labor collapsing in the UK and the rise of Corbyn's new left-wing party. We'll be right back after this. We are back, and we are joined now by Natasha Hakimi-Zapata, award-winning journalist, author of Another World is Possible, Lessons for America from Around the Globe. And she has a new piece in The Nation entitled Labor Has Only Itself to Blame for the UK's New Left-Wing Party. Natasha, thanks so much for coming on the show today.
Thanks for having me.
Of course. Tell us a little bit about the Labour Party's very bad month of September, because their support has already, sunk like a stone since they won the election last year, but it was as unconvincing and as narrow as possible. What has been happening under Labour Party rule, I guess, in the UK?
Yeah, just to back up a little bit, you have 14 years of conservative rule and then one very bad year of labor rule in which there just seemed to be sort of muddling through with kind of Tory light policies, sometimes moving even further right on certain issues. And people are really hurting in the UK. So public services are crumbling. You have the beloved National Health Service, through systematic underfunding and austerity policies, really struggling to recover from the COVID-19 pandemic. There's a cost of living crisis fueled by an energy crisis. And, you have about over a third of children in poverty in the UK. And so even though a lot of that was inherited by this new Labour government that won a what's called a loveless landslide last July with Keir Starmer at the helm, Labour hasn't been seen to really change anything meaningfully, which, you know, when they were elected last summer, that's what a lot of people were hoping for after 14 years of Tories. But things sort of came to a head this past September. So just a few things that happened was that the Deputy Prime Minister, Angela Rayner, had to quit over a tax scandal. She didn't pay enough tax on a property sale or property purchase. It was the same week that the UK's ambassador to the US was found to have close ties to Jeffrey Epstein, so Peter Mandelson. Then you had, that's just a few things that happened that week. You also, the week was kind of bookended with, on Saturday, September 6th, 900 activists being arrested in London during a demonstration for support of Palestine Action, a group that Starmer's government has recently designated a terrorist organization.
Wow.
Yes, and you know, this is actually the second time that hundreds of activists have been arrested at a pro-Palestine protest, and you know, what's being seen as an escalating clampdown on free speech. And on the other end of that week, you have the largest far-right protest in British history. So over 150,000 people, again, coming out in London in support of white supremacist figures like Tommy Robinson, with Elon Musk appearing via live stream calling for an end to this government. So all of this is to say it has been a pretty bad September for Labour and Keir Starmer.
And could you give people some more context, if they're unfamiliar, as to the nature of Labour's victory last year and how, yes, they are the majority government, but it was as, you know, unconvincing as it gets in terms of how they were able to take power.
Right. So the reason it's being called a loveless landslide is that Keir Starmer's Labour actually had less share of the vote, thanks to what's called the first past the post system. So they don't have proportional representation here in Parliament, which is less share of the vote than Jeremy Corbyn's Labour did a few years ago. And so even though they have a pretty huge majority in Parliament, they actually have less popular support in absolute numbers than Jeremy Corbyn's Labour did. And so a lot of this kind of loveless landslide also reveals just how fragile things are in the UK. You have the sort of two main parties, the Labour Party and the Conservatives, the Tory Party, slowly falling apart in many ways. So the Tories are kind of becoming irrelevant. You have the rise of Reform led by Nigel Farage, who sort of led the charge for Brexit and has since started a new party called Reform. And at the same time, Labour, which especially under Jeremy Corbyn was a left-wing socialist party, obviously a broad church party in which you had people like Keir Starmer, who would be considered a sort of the center right of the party, moving further and further and further right. So just to give you an idea on things like immigration, in this last cabinet shakeup that Keir Starmer had after his deputy prime minister resigned and he had all this embarrassment with the UK ambassador to the US, he had Shabana Mahmood, who's on the right of Labour, who's further right than even him, take over as Home Secretary, and recently announced at the Labour conference that they're going to be even more restrictive barriers for immigrants to get citizenship in the UK. And so many people see all of this as further normalizing the far right, further fueling the rise of Reform that is being seen in many polls to possibly win the majority of seats in Parliament if they're in a coming general election. And again, as I said earlier, at the same time, people are really suffering, and this Labour government has done very little to show them that they actually care about workers, that they actually care about, you know, public services. They've continued with austerity policies. They've even implemented some very mean ones of their own, like getting rid of a winter fuel payment for the elderly and eventually having to backtrack on that, but then re-implementing it with means testing. So just, you know, things like that, like the elderly not even being able to depend on being able to heat their homes during winter.
And it should be noted that many of the British consultants that have assisted Keir Starmer in this center-right takeover of labor were advising, unfortunately, the Kamala Harris campaign in the fall. And you can see how some of those similar capitulations were adopted on issues like immigration and, you know, a more abundancy focus on like free market solutions to housing and things like that. But this seems even more severe to me than that. Like, embracing austerity, are we back in the 90s or something like that? It's so retrograde that it's obviously untenable.
Yeah, and, you know, just to go back to immigration, speaking of how shocking some of this has been, Keir Starmer himself made a speech in which he said that the UK was at risk of becoming an island of strangers, with echoes, many pointed out there were echoes of the white supremacist Enoch Powell's Rivers of Blood speech. And that kind of language was just impossible to expect from a labor leader, even from some Tories just a few years ago.
Obviously, the issue of Palestine looms so large over all of this. We can trace the devolution of kind of all of this to the expulsion of Jeremy Corbyn from Labour. And he is forming a new left-wing political party that seems to be generating a lot of enthusiasm. It's called the Your Party, Y-O-U-R. Along with, I believe, this former Labour Parliament member, Zahra Sultana, although I did read some article that maybe she's being a little bit sidelined, although perhaps that's too in the weeds. But tell us a little bit about this new party that Corbyn's trying to form.
Yeah, so Corbyn and Sultana and a few other independent MPs who last summer during the same general election were elected as independents, partly because of their stance on Gaza, because many people on the left here in the UK and many others, there's actually more than half of Britons say that Israel's actions in Gaza are unjustified. 65% of Labour voters do. And many people see Starmer's continued support and funding and arming of the Israeli state during what the United Nations has called a genocide just impossible to support. And so recognizing that Gaza has become a key fault line in British politics, Corbyn and Sultana, who was actually kicked out of the Labour Party, not just because she voted against one of these sort of mean austerity measures that was going to, you know, really affect vulnerable people, she was told she could not be let back into the party because of social media posts that she had being critical of the government's support of Israel. And so this is kind of a key reason that this new party, Your Party, gets started. But again, a lot of the support that it immediately gets is based as well on just how much people are suffering, how Labour seems to have been purging the left, as you've pointed out, starting with Jeremy Corbyn himself in 2020, as soon as Starmer essentially took the reins of Labour, but also, you know, continually kicking out left-wing MPs who vote against their austerity policies. And this new party, Your Party, has been announced to sort of fill that void on the left that many, many, many people here feel. And you had, within days, despite a rocky start, which, you know, I described, and as you said, there's still quite a few issues and some infighting and things that are kind of messily publicly or spilling into the public, about 800,000 people have signed up now to support this party. And that was just within a few days, actually. So there's clearly this really desperate desire for a left alternative.
Palestine is the tip of the spear in that way. Like, you know, just like here in the U.S., it's a litmus test for bravery on other issues. Even issues like housing, for example, is an issue that you highlight in your piece. Can you describe the split between, like, what Labor is proposing on that front and what, say, the, like, left-wing vision of the Your Party would be speaking about, just as another example?
Right. So this is a notoriously landlord-friendly country. I think it goes all the way back to feudalism, honestly. And you have the Labor government, this current Labor government, finally passing, you know, renters' protections. There's no rent control. Your landlord can kind of turn around and just raise your rent 30% with what the next time you're trying to get a contract. There's a ton of other issues. And this renters' rights bill that has still not been implemented, that is hopefully not going to be killed, but there are already rumors that it might be killed, is a step in the right direction, as many people told me. And yet they stop short of doing things like rent control, which were actually common before Margaret Thatcher in the 1980s. And that's just kind of indicative of what this Labor government has done across the board. So on some issues moving further right, like immigration, but on others just kind of messing around the edges of things and not going far enough, not really creating or articulating an alternative vision from the chaos that people have experienced here for the past over a decade.
And reform, that's a good place to turn. Nigel Farage, we've covered him on our show a bit sparingly, but like a rising right-wing figure in UK politics, once dismissed as a crank, now leading this kind of like alternative far-right party that's centered around anti-immigrant sentiment. Stop me if you've heard this before. What are the prospects of reforms, the Reform Party making significant gains next election cycle? I know they already did, but we could be talking about a far-right government if trends continue.
Right. I mean, the most recent polls show Reform UK actually getting a majority in Parliament, meaning that Nigel Farage could possibly be the next Prime Minister of the UK. Labour are now, you know, really talking about reform as the opposition. They just had their conference, and Starmer and all of these other Labour leaders made all of these speeches, and reform was mentioned constantly. Farage was mentioned constantly. But importantly, before another general election, which won't be for another few years, you have local elections in the spring of 2026, in which Labour is expected to lose a massive amount of council seats. And that's actually, you know, they're expected to lose them to reform, but also Your Party insiders tell me that the party is positioning itself to take back some of those disaffected left-wing voters that Starmer seems to have nothing but contempt for these days.
And can you speak a little bit about more about that effort? What are the issues that are central to that kind of attempt to bring voters over?
Right. So as you pointed out, the party is still forming. It's set up all of these assemblies and a conference in November in which they're going to vote on a name. So it's actually not going to be called Your Party, or maybe it is. They're trying to make it as democratic as possible, which, you know, has its pros and cons. Right. But so a lot of things haven't been decided yet, and a policy platform hasn't been decided yet. But what is their assumed policy platform, just based on things like Corbyn's track record, Sultana's track record, and what they've said, is that they'll be anti-austerity. They're in favor of tax rises on the wealthy. They are also in favor of funding the National Health Service, which is extremely popular in the UK, as you know, and keeping it in public hands and kind of rolling back some of that stealth privatization that we've seen since the 1980s, and things like rent controls. These are all extremely popular and are things that that your party would presumably run on, and yet sort of the exact opposite of the direction that Labour has been taking.
Yeah, I mean, and I'm seeing this IM here saying, you know, your party could be a spoiler. I just want just to educate some people a little bit on the parliamentary system, if you don't mind expanding on how it's quite different than the United States.
And maybe don't expel your left wing if you don't want a spoiler. But
yeah, good
anyway,
point.
Go on.
But
Well, that's kind of exactly right. And that's what a lot of people told me. You know, like, people are blaming Corbyn and this new party for possibly this rise of reform. But the reality is, even before this party your party existed, the rise of reform was sort of happening in large part because of the way that Labour and the Tories have normalized Farage and this anti-immigrant rhetoric. But also, as Matt pointed out, if you get rid of your left, it sort of follows that they have to figure something else out. You know, Jeremy Corbyn is an independent. He was in the Labour Party for decades. And, you know, for the first time in his career is outside of it. And so a lot of people, both within politics and outside of it, are looking for an alternative, and they're not going to go back to Labour. With regards to the way that the parliamentary system works, it is true that with a first-past-the-post system in which it's not proportional representation, you could have a situation in which the left vote is split. But again, it's sort of questionable whether the left would even vote for Labour anymore. Many, many, many Labour voters have told me that they wouldn't, especially with the direction that this government's taking. There's also a possibility of a coalition with the Green Party. So the Green Party now has a new leader, Zach Polanski, who actually has very similar views to Corbyn and Sultana, who's kind of an eco-populist, as he calls himself. And despite the fact that there are clearly electoral challenges, there is still quite a lot that seemingly can be done even within the system.
Right. I mean, you can form a coalition. I just it's different than, of course, the United States on that front. So, lastly, where do you see this going over the next year or so ahead of the 2026 elections that you're speaking about? I mean, we've talked about it in broad strokes, but can the worst be avoided? Like, you're talking about Elon Musk doing virtual rallies on behalf of reform. We saw that at the very least the worst was avoided in a somewhat similar example in Germany. I know that the conservative government still ended up winning there, but that was where Elon was trying to put his thumb on the scales, and you can see the global far right trying to coalesce behind Farage and reform. Do you think they'll be successful? What's your read?
So, despite the fact that, as we pointed out earlier, there's been some sort of chaos within the party and a bit of public trust has been lost recently for this new party, your party, there's such a desperate desire for a mass left party that it seems like people still have enough goodwill to kind of go forward and go to this conference and really establish this party and set an agenda and hopefully, you know, be ready for those local elections. And when it comes to the far right, this country has a long history of fighting off the far right. You had Edward Mosley and his black shirts in the 1920s and 30s, and he never rose to power, really, because just as much as there are fascist elements and far-right elements within British society, there's also a very strong left, and although, you know, has been weakened in recent decades, there's still a very strong left and still a very strong anti-fascist tradition. And so I don't know exactly what's going to happen in these upcoming elections, but you know, as someone who lives here, I'm really hoping that a new, better vision for the UK starts to take form soon.
Thanks for leaving us with a little bit of a glimmer of hope. Natasha Hakimi-Zapata, you can read this piece talking about a lot of this in The Nation. Labour has only itself to blame for the UK's new left-wing party. And then, of course, Natasha's book, Another World is Possible, Lessons for America from Around the Globe. Thanks so much for coming on the show. Really appreciate it.
Thanks so much, Emma.
Of course. With that, folks, we are going to wrap up the free part of this show and head into the fun part of the show. We will have fun today. I'm very excited to make fun of Benny Johnson and Corey Lewandowski obsessing over Bad Bunny at the Super Bowl.
Every American will soon receive their own MedBed card.
Just a little behind the scenes. Matt has not stopped talking about the med beds since Monday.
I've played that song clip pretty much every 15 minutes. So
I'll put it on the soundboard. Med bed, med bed, med bed, med bed. It's fun to say.
Yeah. Brandon Sutton.
Oh, hey, Brandon.
Good afternoon, party people. How's it going?
It's going well. Have you heard about med beds? Have you placed your name on the waiting list?
I mean, I'm trying to get my name on the waiting list, but it's so popular that it's like getting a labubu now.
Do you think the med bed can like work out for you? Like you can just sit in there and it's like mm-hmm. the equivalent of like going to the gym?
Well, it incorporates Trump's scientific kind of explanations for things. So in fact, resting is better than going to the gym and laying horizontally. That's how your battery recharges in the med bed. Anyway, Brandon, what's happening on your show?
Oh, well, I think I've had a few days off, and by I think I mean I know because I was visiting the UK. But now that I'm back, we're going to be diving right back into where we left off, which is Charlie Kirk conspiracies. And they've really been percolating since I've been away for the past 3 days. I feel like where we are now is nowhere near where we were yesterday. And by yesterday, I mean last week. And other than that, I think we'll just be looking to have a lot more fun over the weekend. Just like, you know, dance as the ship goes down.
Well, I'm all for that. Matt, what's happening on Left Reckoning?
Left Reckoning. We had a couple of great guests. Gwen Howerton talking about the attack on trans folks down in Texas. One ground zero in that. Fascist assault. And also Gil Durand talking about Peter Thiel's obsession with the Antichrist and how, let's say, like, if there's one group of people Peter Thiel would want to impress, it's sort of like religious fanatic Austrians, and they apparently did not, they were not fans of his lecture series, which is probably very, it's very disappointing for him, but I would talk about that. And also, YouTube, where we're 100 subscribers short of 50,000, we're going to be premiering part of our look into Ezra Klein's Identity Crisis right Ooh. After Majority Report finishes today.
All right. Check it out, folks. For Matt Binder, he'll, I believe, be joining us in the fun half, but check out the Scam Economy, Dooms, Leftist Mafia, his newsletter as well, which I need the name of, but I can't remember right now. That's why we need him here. He'll tell us on the other side of things. We will see you in the fun half.
Okay, Emma, please.
Well, I feel that my voice is sorely lacking on the Majority Report.
Wait, whoa. Look, Sam is unpopular.
I do deserve a vacation at Disney World. So, ladies and gentlemen, it is my pleasure to welcome Emma to the show.
It is Thursday.
I think you need to take over for Sam.
Yes, please.
No. I'm gonna pause you right there.
Wait, what?
You can't encourage Emma to live like this. And I'll tell you why.
So it was offered a tour, sushi, and poker with the boys. Tour, sushi, and poker with the boys. So it was offered a tour,
yeah.
Sushi, and poker with the boys.
What?
Tour, sushi, and poker.
Tim's upset.
Tour, sushi, and poker with the boys. So it was offered a tour, sushi, and
that's what we call the biz.
Tour, sushi, and poker with the boys.
Right.
Tour, sushi, and poker.
We're gonna get demonetized.
I just think that what you did to Tim Pool was mean.
Free speech. Huh.
That's not what we're about here.
Well, look at how sad he's become now.
You shouldn't even talk about him. I think you're responsible.
I probably am in a certain way, but let's get to the meltdown here.
Twerk, sushi, and poker with the boys.
Oh my god.
Twerk,
wow.
Sushi. I'm sorry, I'm losing my fucking mind. So it's offered to twerk, sushi, and poker with the boys.
Logic.
Twerk, sushi, and poker with the boys. Boy,
twerk. I think I'm like a little kid. I think I'm like a kid. Twerk. I think I'm like a little kid.
Add this debate 7,000 times.
A little kid. Think I'm like a little kid. Think I'm like a kid. Twerk.
I'm losing my fucking mind.
Some people just don't understand.
So I'm not trying to be a dick right now, but like, I absolutely think the U.S. should be providing me with a wife and kids.
That's not what we're talking about here.
It's not a fun job.
Twerk? That's a real thing. That's real thing. Real thing.
Boss. Willy Wonka.
Twerk? That's a real thing. That's real thing. Real thing.
What's that? Offered to twerk?
That's a real thing. That's real thing. Real thing.
Boss. That's
twerk.
A real thing.
That's real thing. Real thing.
Boss. That offered to twerk?
Ladies and gentlemen, Joe Rogan has done it again.
That offered to twerk?
That's a real thing.
That's
poker with the boys.
I think he might be blowing it out of proportion.
Real thing.
That's
poker with the boys.
That offered to twerk?
That's a real thing.
That's
poker.
Let's go, Joe.
Twerk. Sushi.
Take it easy, then.
Twerk, sushi, and poker.
Things have really gotten out of hand.
Sushi and poker with the boys.
Delusional.
Twerk.
Deluded.
Sushi.
You don't have a clue as to what's going on. Live YouTube.
Sam has like the weight of the world on his shoulders.
Poggers.
Sam doesn't want to do this show anymore.
Can't do it anymore.
It was so much easier when the Majority Report was just you.
You were happy. Let's change the subject.
Rangers and Knicks are doing great.
Now shut up. Don't want people saying reckless things on your program.
That's
now,
one of the most difficult parts about this show.
This is a pro-killing podcast.
I'm thinking maybe it's time we bury the hatchet.
Left is best. Trump. Violet.
Twerk.
Don't be foolish and don't fucking tweet at me and don't bitch. The way Emma has cucked all of these people. Love it.
That's where my heart is, so yeah. I wrote my honors thesis about it.
Oh, she wrote an honors thesis. I guess I should hand the main mic to you now.
You are to the right of the foreign policy.
We already fund Israel, dude. Are you against that?
That's a tougher question. I don't have an answer to.
Incredible theme song.
Hi, Bumbler.
Emma Viglin, absolutely one of my favorite people. Actually, not just in the game, like, period.
We are back just in the nick of time, and we have Matt Binder. Hello.
Hello.
Hello. What is happening on your end of things?
Tonight at youtube.com/Matt Binder, we have a special guest on Leftist Mafia joining us. Laverne Cox will be on the show. So check that out tonight. Yeah.
That's awesome. Very cool. Pittsburgh power broker Joe Rogan brought up the joke Kimmel said about not letting the unvaxxed in the ER last week.
Yep.
Something about that completely broke their brain. So he's Jim Brewer now.
Exactly. It's the exact same sort of reservation.
It's absolutely insane.
You made jokes about people having vaccine anxiety. How dare you? That is vaccine anxiety that is actually like been used by powerful people like Jay Bhattacharya to obscure the thing that actually should have happened in response to a pandemic that kills millions of people, which is to extend health insurance to everyone as a human right.
Cole from Ohio.
That's crazy, Matt.
Oh,
it makes way more sense to weaken the public health sector. Why would you do what you just said? No. After a global pandemic, it makes way more sense to lax regulations and standards. Not enough people died.
Cole from Ohio. One med, one bed.
Every American will soon receive their own med bed card.
Card. He doesn't even know what he sounds like. Fig, I have to say that to be able to listen to Emma without any men cutting her off, more of this. Is that just Sam? Because Sam's not it?
Let me stop you right there, Emma.
The left wanted to make comedy illegal, you know.
Thank you. Very nice. Eric in Portland says, let's go Yankees. Not what?
Oh, what happened last night? Yeah. I genuinely didn't look. Sorry to ask.
Well, it's because Sam made a prediction. As I said, I called it. I mean,
a bunch of disgusting Italian pigs dancing like Trump to YMCA. We're having a good night.
Wow. Lots of anti-Italian racism.
God did that.
Coming from this New Englander. What a shock.
Uh-huh. I'll give him a pass. It's fine. He can do it.
Take it up with the De Palma side of my family.
Okay. Well, I guess you get a pass.
And I am in it to win it.
Vaughn from Wisconsin, strained hypothetical on this show. What are you doing, Emma? No Pasenada says, as a Mexican American, I am both offended by the retrograde anti-Mexican racism of the Republicans' new favorite meme and by Hakeem Jeffries pearl clutching over it. There you go.
Yeah, dismiss it as nasty racism and move on to material.
Exactly. the online trash bag. Hakeem Jeffries is the suggestion box for House Dems. Everyone knows it's pointless to go that route. Just go to someone who can actually do something, like effectively communicate. Sloppy Joe. AOC and Sanders are not in leadership positions, but there's a vacuum there. Where's Schumer and Jeffries? Exactly.
I mean, that's the thing, is like, they need to find a way to use this moment to take actual leadership power.
Yep.
If you're going to be pushed forward on a sinking ship, frankly, you better at least get the, you know, the, what do they call the thing that you steer the ship with?
The rudder?
You're in the military. What's the rudder? Is that what it, no, the rudder is the thing that actually moves it, but what's the like
the
circular
army. I was
thing?
On land. I don't know.
Never mind. Okay. Oh, I'm going to Google ship parts.
Wheel? You mean the wheel? The ship wheel?
The steering wheel?
Yeah. What's the, what, isn't there a better a name? It's just called the ship's wheel. Oh, it is just called the ship's wheel. Oh,
yeah.
That's boring. Oh,
Nassau County, did you guys see Nancy Pelosi crash out over AOC saying Republicans that... Oh, yeah, we played that. Make Fun Have Fun Again says... Pelosi doesn't sit on any committees. What is she still doing in Congress? I mean, I guess she's Jeffries' babysitter.
I mean, she's guarding skeletons in the party's closet.
Yeah.
Why does any very old politician stay in power? Most of the reason is that.
Not Nick Fuentes says, hello, Emma and Matt. If you're just reading this, I am. I want you to know that it shocks me to know that James Carville, besides being an anti-woke asshole like Bill Maher, is a consultant at Palantir. At this point, pretty much everyone now on TV and politics and everyone in the Democratic Party are Republicans. God, I hate this country, proceeds to scream in a pillow out of anger.
Yeah, that's just something that apparently just MSNBC never feels the need to have him disclose at the start of him dispensing wisdom is, oh, this guy helped Palantir institute surveillance technology on unwittingly on the city of New Orleans that didn't know that it happened until they started noticing New Orleans be mentioned in promotional materials from Palantir as they tried to sell it to other cities. Thank you, James Carville.
That's absolutely insane. Let's...
We have a piece from this Pete Hegseth thing,
sure,
that Brandon mentioned. I did not see this. There's a bunch of weird stuff that Pete came out with. But this is just one. This was ripped by Aaron Rupar.
The new War Department golden rule is this. Do unto your unit as you would have done unto your own child's unit.
What?
Would you want him serving with fat or unfit or undertrained troops? Or alongside people who can't meet basic standards? Or in a unit where standards were lowered so certain types of troops could make it in? In a unit where leaders were promoted for reasons other than merit, performance, and warfighting? The answer is not just no, it's hell no.
Do unto your child's unit.
He says, hell no, I don't want that done to my child's unit, so I wouldn't do it to my own. This speech was written by like AI or maybe an alien that is only just vaguely familiar with what political or motivational speeches should sound like. It is my interpretation of the way it came across.
Why would anyone care if their child's military unit has overweight people in it?
Can I just say, like,
this is kitchen table issues. Just want to throw that out there.
I would recommend Seth Harp's book, The Fort Bragg Cartel, for any parents who might be looking at having their children join the military. The problem isn't like trans people. It's people running drugs and doing other horrible crimes in the military. Like that's a bigger threat than, you know, fat people, I think.
Also, like, just to take what he said, like at that value, at face value, like military families are a thing. There are a lot of people who do have their children in the military and never said that, never had any problems with the current state of the military in terms of who's serving. Like, it's just he doesn't have anyone serving in the military, because that's why he's coming at it from that angle, because he doesn't know what it's like.
I'll never forget the look on my parents' face when I told them that the people I served with were overweight. They were so terrified for my future, for my safety.
And you were
That's
like,
why you objected, right?
Yeah.
That's all these fatties.
You're like, oh, maybe they're right. But on the flip side, in this instance, I mean, just using his logic, perhaps being the only so-called fit soldier in the unit would benefit you, because everybody else is an easy target and you get to run away.
Yeah, it's
so...
like in a bear attack. You just don't want to be the slowest.
Right.
That sounds like a Daily Wire movie, like The Last Fit Soldier, like a Lady Ballist-esque movie where you just get like one buff soldier, like an Arnold Schwarzenegger type who like joins
Kevin
the military
Sorbo.
Only to find... Yeah, Kevin Sorbo. But like voided up, like super.
So like gigantic. Kind of Lone Survivor, you know, like
it's a
that
sequel
movie.
To Fat
yeah.
Camp.
But yeah, but he has to survive in the woke DEI military.
In Fat Boot Camp, it's going to be Jillian Michaels making her triumphant return to Big
as
Brother.
As the one woman who can meet the standards?
Yeah, yeah. What was the name of that show? That horrible show that she was on? Not
the
Big
Biggest
Brother.
Loser.
Biggest Loser.
Yeah, right. Where she publicly humiliated people for fun. Yeah,
also,
seems
why,
like a great lady.
Why does Hegseth pretend that we're fighting World War II? Like,
I
this
know.
Isn't how the military is anymore. It's pushing buttons.
That's what I was saying yesterday.
It's the fascist aesthetic, funny enough. Like, he's very concerned with, like, presenting an image of the American military that is very familiar to anyone who remembers the propaganda surrounding Nazi World War II, Ubermensch, you know, blonde, blue-eyed Aryans. Like, he's talking about them not being allowed to be too short, not being allowed to be, like, out of weight out of a very specific shape at any level of the military in any position, which is going to decimate the ranks, right? Because 70% of the military must just be desk jobs now, just due to the nature of modern warfare. But that's not the image they want to present to, you know, each other, to the, you know, rest of the world, to the MAGA chuds who like are obviously sitting on their couch not joining the military, but want to, you know, live vicariously through that kind of Giga Chad archetype.
I mean, that's why he was selected. Central casting. Mm. Donald Trump liked the way he looked. He liked the fascist aesthetic. He liked that Hegseth could be just like transposed into the 1930s and look like a German propaganda
poster.
Why can't
my sons look like you?
Yes.
No,
it's
I
basically
think, see,
that.
See, that's you being superficial, Emma. I think he appointed Pete Hegseth because of his public speaking skills. I think after hearing that motivational speech, I wanted to join the American military and like do some push-ups or pull-ups or whatever the hell they're doing now.
Yeah. No, look, we should stop joking about this. Yeah, right. Yeah. Brian's like, send me back in. In all seriousness, Trump probably picked him, yes, due to his aesthetic, but also because he is prime blackmail material. And that is very, very
and
valuable to someone who only values loyalty.
I like guys who get away with rapes.
Yeah. I like rapists who don't get caught, okay?
Yeah, you even put your mother-in-law in line. Or was it his own mother? It wasn't even his mother-in-law.
It was his mother who said
mother.
That
yeah.
he was an abuser of women.
Tell her that she's being woke.
You know that phrase, like, a face like a mother couldn't even love? Yeah. He's a personality a mother
a
couldn't even love.
Predator only a mother could love.
Yeah. Oof. Carl Demsock said, Matt, you're probably looking for Take the Helm.
I think what it was. They call it the helm, though. I need to play more Sea of Thieves.
No, the helm is like the front of the ship, right? Not the bow. I don't know.
We need people to, if you're going to make a suggestion, folks, you better be like qualified to make these.
I'm seeing a few people say helm. Okay. So
put them at the helm, then.
The only ship captain I respect is Captain Crunch. And only when it comes without the punch berry.
Illuminati kids, everybody knows you put military units together like NES ice hockey. You have to build for the stadium, balancing the fat, the thin, and average guys.
You got to find the hottest guys, the hottest, most jacked guys to lead the military. It's yeah. nothing weird about that.
It's not. Don't examine it any further.
And make a calendar.
Right. Yeah.
And also just make sure your child's unit is always being mentioned for some reason. It's the GOP, the modern right. GOP.
And in relation to your unit, speaking about your child's unit and your unit in the same sentence.
You want your children in there with all the hot guys.
It's Mike Johnson wrote that speech, obviously. So, you know, that I slipped in.
Working together with his son. Yeah. As you should. It's so beautiful.
Anyway, if you guys see a Grindr account, it's because my son's playing a prank on me.
Yeah, I respect the hell out of the new Department of War or whatever it's called.
Oh, yeah. Let's, what should we do here? Yeah, let's have fun with that and then we'll open up a phone line. So, not sure if you guys heard, but Bad Bunny is going to be the Super Bowl halftime show performer. Now, this is predictably very upsetting for folks in right-wing circles. And
was Forgiato Blow not available?
Right. There's apparently some rumors Brian was saying before the show that they're going to try to do their alternative to the Super Bowl halftime show.
Oh, we can Lara play Trump it at the sound sheet.
Okay, well, we'll play it after.
No, TPUSA.
Oh, yes. Oh, yes.
Thinking about doing their own Super Bowl halftime show.
Right, they should do it. They should do it.
I think Lara Trump should perform. She should perform that, like, that Trump assassination
song. Tom Petty song, yeah. Free Falling.
I Won't Back Down.
Or I Won't Back Down, sorry. Yeah.
I want the people who made the hologram Tupac to make a hologram Charlie Kirk and have it play CCR records.
AI could do this. AI could have Charlie come out
it's
and
an
just
unfortunate son.
Yeah, just it's no sing YMCA.
Have Charlie do YMCA. People
yes,
love it.
I think
Fortunate Son was a very good
yes.
Very good choice.
Brian was more layers deep than me on that. Benny Johnson had Corey Lewandowski on to talk about this, and why this is actually fairly relevant, even though I know it's not 2016 anymore, is that I'm not sure if you guys read this. It was like 2 weeks ago. There was a New York Magazine article by Ben Terrace about, it was called Who Really Runs DHS, and it was about Kristi Noem and her relationship with Corey Lewandowski. Now, Corey Lewandowski was Trump's campaign manager in 2016, but he kind of got ousted because... Remember, he like was got rough with a female reporter. Also, he was like clashing with the traditional Republican staffer people because he was the guy who was the let Trump be Trump guy and everybody else was trying to rein him in. So it's no shock that Trump, despite him being like not a trustworthy person, really enough to get an official position.
You can trust him to grab a woman by the arm and put her in her place.
Though. Right, right. Like, yeah. Trump wants him around because he's the guy that let Trump be Trump. And it was reported in New York Magazine, as it has been elsewhere, that Corey Lewandowski and Kristi Noem have been banging for many, many years. She's still married. Her husband apparently lives in South Dakota, and she lives in Washington, D.C., and Corey Lewandowski is
it's a long way away, South
hanging
Dakota.
Out there a lot.
Long and way away
like,
from Pierre.
If you don't see it, it didn't happen. And the problem is that Lewandowski does not have an official position within the Department of Homeland Security because like he would have to go through a process. But he's acting as her chief of staff, as her frickin' boyfriend.
Staffer, right.
And you hear, like, DHS people were talking to New York Magazine and were like, he's a bully, it's super weird, like, everything has to go through him before it goes to Kristi Noem.
It's romantic.
It's, I mean, yeah, standing up for his woman. But, he went on Benny Johnson's show to talk about, of course, Bad Bunny playing at the Super Bowl halftime show and what the Trump immigration enforcement folks, which he is in now, are going to do about this.
So talk about the opposite of big balls. Let's talk about the NFL. So the NFL leadership has decided to hire a cross.
Can you? So I'm just trying to imagine being a normal person listening to this.
What do you mean the opposite of big balls? Like
a massively popular pop star?
Or
saying the NFL has no balls for.
No, I get it. Yeah. But I get it. But like, okay, it's just a bad joke because the footballs are large and they're playing a game of sport, sports with balls. Okay, great.
A bad joke from
so the NFL leadership has decided
to
have big balls.
Going. What did you say,
Brandon? No. I was just saying a bad joke from a Republican. I can't
never.
Yeah.
Let's listen to this closeted guy and a mistress.
Allegedly.
They're now doing that for the first time in a long time.
So talk about the opposite of big balls. Let's talk about the NFL. So the NFL leadership has decided to hire a cross-dressing, America-hating, ice-hating Puerto Rican dude whose music I haven't heard any of. But his name's Bad Bunny, and he says that he dislikes Donald Trump endorsed Kamala Harris.
He hasn't heard his music, but I wonder if Benny Johnson's been to his Instagram.
Maybe.
I've seen some photos on there. They're nice.
They're not playing Bad Bunny in those clubs, Benny?
Yeah.
I think they might be playing Bad Bunny.
That's a lie that he's never heard of Bad Bunny before. Give me
a break. It's inescapable. He's almost Taylor Swift level big.
He said that he's never listened to his music, but I'm just pointing out that, Bad Bunny posts some thirst traps for sure. All right, keep going.
Harris. And he doesn't sing in English, but nonetheless, he's been hired as the Super Bowl halftime show in spite of the fact that he refuses to tour in America because he's so scared of ICE. He's so scared of Homeland Security enforcement.
It's like a Stephen Miller thing coming through with Benny now.
Mm-hmm.
Some weird. What are they on?
The fact that he refuses to tour in America because he's so scared of ICE. He's so scared of Homeland Security enforcement, knowing that those, his concerts would be a nexus for immigration enforcement. And he's probably right on that. I saw what ICE did outside of the Gavin Newsom rally in California. And that seemed wildly effective.
Okay,
and
I'm sorry.
So,
I just want to explain this. He did cancel his tour due to ICE, but my understanding is that he was afraid for his own
fans. He's Puerto Rican.
Yeah,
Yeah.
He was taking a stand.
He was protecting his
right because he has a large Spanish-speaking fan base.
But they don't understand that. They don't understand taking a stand for someone who isn't you.
Exactly.
Yeah, they don't get that.
Yeah.
Your comments, Corey, on this. Will ICE have enforcement at the Super Bowl for the Bad Bunny Super Bowl halftime show?
Benny, there is nowhere that you can provide safe haven to people who are in this country illegally, not the Super Bowl and nowhere else. We will find you. We will apprehend you. We will put you in a detention facility and we will deport you. So know that that is a very real situation under this administration, which is completely contrary to how it used to be. That said, the NFL has been so woke for so many years. They finally decided to make a comeback. They finally had people stand up for our great national anthem. But remember, these guys, Colin Kaepernick used to say, well, I wasn't being chosen to play on the NFL team because I was kneeling. No, you sucked, and that's why you weren't being played. That's why no team wanted to pick you up because they're a business at the bottom line.
Why do you have to lie about that?
They lie about this all the time. Colin Kaepernick went to a Super Bowl. Colin Kaepernick was one of the better dual threat quarterbacks of my lifetime. He had a rocket arm. He was developing, and his career was derailed towards the end by injury. And then eventually because the whole 49ers team collapsed, and then they got rid of Harbaugh, and they had that whole, coaching carousel, the team collapsed around him, and the NFL abandoned him due to his activism.
Blackballed him, yeah.
Yes. I keep going.
And so here's where we are, Benny. I used to love watching NFL games. I used to love watching baseball games. And when sports got into wokeness, I stopped doing it. Now I still participate in the
Do people find this relatable?
Yeah,
I mean, their audience does. Their very specific audience does.
But
they're
not
sports
fans.
No, of course not. No normal person cares about this shit.
Okay, that's all I was trying to say.
Because I just want to, like, arguably the least woke sport in the country is the NFL. Although, unfortunately, we now have hockey players and baseball players that are doing the Trump dance. But the NFL
and
is like...
The idea that sports are woke is stupid.
Like, right.
It's just dumb.
But I mean, okay.
These are capitalist decisions.
Yes.
And this is the exact same thing with ABC, right? Capitalists made a decision about Jimmy Kimmel. And all the Republicans, to obscure the fact that capitalists run our lives and decide everything, said, oh, there was just a decision, a business decision, that because he wasn't qualified or he wasn't making funny jokes or whatever. That's the exact same thing of these guys, they have all the power that own these football teams, and have a monopoly that's protected by the government, yep, allowed to be a monopoly. They run the stuff, and they can just blackball a player because he takes a knee during a national anthem because of police brutality in this country. And that's just like a natural... And it's... Oh, yeah, it has nothing to do with that. It has... It was just he stopped learning how to throw a football. And all these other shitty quarterbacks that were getting a chance after chance were somehow better than a dual-threat quarterback like that.
Right.
No, that's a great point. Just to jump in real quick, it's also why like the right's complaints about cancel culture and like leftist boycotting was always just complete nonsense, because this has always been part and parcel of their strategy in America. The complain and whine and lead harassment campaigns and boycotts until they get their way, and then in hindsight they frame it like this, like, oh, people just didn't really like it anyway. Like, people just didn't really like it. And when it comes to football and other major sports leagues, I think it's really easy for them to portray them as woke, the same way it's really easy for them to portray colleges in Hollywood as woke, because the most front-facing elements of it in sports tend to be black or people of color in general. In Hollywood, it tends to be like liberal, at least liberal presenting actors and actresses. And in schools, it's professors, some of which are people of color, and of course, like, the youth. And so they ignore the institutional power in favor of highlighting and focusing on like the most superficial elements of it, because it tickles their bigotry.
Right, right. And they also try to discipline these forces of culture. Like, playing the refs. Like, I saw, you know, I don't want to spoil it for anybody, so I'm really not going to talk about details, but One Battle After Another was one of the best films I've seen in theaters in years. And, you know, I'm furiously looking on YouTube to watch reviews of it just to, like, digest more about it. And half of them are just right-wingers getting ahead of it. And you just see how they feel like they are proactive in their defense, because they know that art and culture and human expression... I put sports in the category of human expression the same way like dance is, but people are more pretentious about that kind of thing. Putting that aside for a sec. Anything that animates people, anything that could open people up to different ideas, say like what you're saying, Brandon, the fact that there is a lot of black representation in sports, and perhaps their favorite player may be a black player, and then they'll hear what he has to say on Instagram about police brutality, about, you know, social injustice or whatever, and that's a threat to them. They have to get ahead of it and try to give excuses and outs, and also create a counter messaging kind of cycle that gives conservatives an edge in their estimation. And that's what they've been doing for so long. Was it Breitbart that said politics is downstream from culture? And you hear, I heard Candace Owens say that in some video clip with Charlie Kirk that was circulating. This is how they operate always. I don't think there's too much more of that, right? Yeah, we have we do have Tim Pool, who of course is with Jack Posobiec. This is their idea, as we hinted at earlier, for counter messaging to keep in the theme.
Let's hear from another set of guys who don't know ball.
Yeah, exactly. Can't talk about Green Bay's cover one defense getting torched by the Cowboys, so we have to talk about Bad Bunny.
The entertainment of it all.
Tim's like, the four wheels on my skateboard are balls, technically. They're spherical.
And that's what they're going to see with Get What Go Broke when people complain about this. And they're not. Well, they're, They're going to try and internationalize or whatever, but they're going to lose American audience.
But this is the one pushback to that, is to Jack's point. They've imported the international audience into our domestic audience.
But when you have a popular vote winner in Donald Trump and a demand for immigration.
The response is simple here. Bring on Creed. We need Creed. We need Scott Stapp. We need them flying down from the rafters. The greatest halftime show that has ever taken place.
Let me give the audience a
little context.
Which
wasn't even a Super Bowl show, by the way.
Let me give the audience.
That was the peak of America.
All right, hold on.
2004.
Let me give the audience a little context. Jack,
Super Bowl,
in response to this, tweeted out something along the lines, there's only one response. We need Creed. I'm literally, it's because, you know, you,
by the way,
you weren't
I did
a fan
not have approval from TPUSA.
No. So this was hilarious. I'm getting multiple inquiries from the media right
so
now.
So have I.
Saying, I would like a comment on are they planning a competing halftime show with Creed? And I'm like, well, I wasn't.
Yes. I am very much in favor of this. I love the idea of sad divorced trucker rock TPUSA halftime show. Let's get Creed. Let's get Theory of a Dead Man. Stained.
But like
Santa Monica.
Their whole shtick though is that they've taken over the culture, right? They're cool to be them now. And their go-to band for a conservative Super Bowl show is one that peaked in the late 90s, early 2000s. Like Creed?
Yeah.
Creed?
Wait,
what you got? Creed?
You could say it's been a while.
that's Nickelback.
it's actually
it really
Stained.
Is old, it's Stained, first of all, and it really
which
is
one's
all
Nickelback,
the same
then?
Thing.
All the other ones.
How you remind me?
That's Three Doors Down.
I know that one. That's Three Doors Down.
Three Doors Down is Superman.
I don't know.
What's going on?
I don't know enough crappy radio rock. So that's where I fail.
Wow. You're just mad that the culture is shifting. We're finally getting around to the things that I love.
But can I say what they're referencing? I know what they're talking about. There was a footage from 2004, as he's talking about, of the Cowboys game. Had I think it was just a regular season game, had Creed come perform on some crappy soundstage for the audience, and that's what they're saying we should bring back.
It was for Thanksgiving, by the way, wasn't just a random game.
Oh, okay, I'm sorry. Just a regular season Thanksgiving game.
The Cowboys, for folks who don't know, the Cowboys play every Thanksgiving. They're like the sort of the marquee event.
It's, them and the Lions.
Besides the Super Bowl, probably the most watched football game of the year. Besides the playoffs.
Yeah, all right. Well, I was trying to downplay it and make fun of it, but fair enough. It's still crazy that, they've also had a bunch of... Remember after the Janet Jackson incident, they just only rolled out, old white bands for that for 10 years?
You can't trust the sexuality.
Yeah.
It was like the Who, tearing their rotator cuffs trying to play guitar.
Aerosmith... anything to make that exact audience of conservative dads that were mad they saw a woman's nipple on television, and by mad I mean turned on and pretending to be mad, having to appease them after that.
But Creed is the millennials Who.
That's
why they're talking about
that
it.
That is really fucking depressing. I would say Fall Out Boy. That might be better.
That's probably gonna happen some point too.
Post grunge is divorced dad rock. It's all songs by bands that look like bikers, but sing solely about their heart being broken, or of course Jesus, but that's also a metaphor for their heart being broken.
Those songs where really you think they're talking about a lady, but it's actually talking about Jesus. If you listen closer,
right? They're slipping that in,
or vice versa.
That's true. All right, guys, I'm going to open up the phone lines now. 646-257-3920. Huthi and the Blowfish writes in, some of y'all have never listened to Scott Stapp sing the Marlins fight song, and it shows.
I think I've seen that on, something a while ago. People should check out the Creed Sucks music video. I don't know if people have heard about that, but it's somebody that overdubs really crappy playing onto a live video there. It's very funny. 2009 era internet content.
Blair, Mountain Enjoyer. Lewandowski doesn't have an official position in DHS, but he does do several unofficial positions. Yuck. Beans and Toast says conservatives think Aerosmith should play again. There you go. Dark Soul Creed is with arms wide open. Right. Maple. Big balls, one time. That's Benny Johnson, I guess. Alex Smith fan says, didn't love Kaepernick at first for some unknown reason. No serious football fan can argue he was not within the top 32 quarterbacks at any time he was available to play. It's completely... Yeah. Yes, he did torch the Packers. Yes.
Have you seen how long veteran quarterbacks stick around?
Joe Flacco is 60 years old, and he just got benched, started and not really, but he can still sling it, though. Those, like, statuesque quarterbacks with big arms, they can do it for a long time.
Hold on to that list of athletes who are still older than me.
Okay. They're like Joe Flacco cling to
still
it.
Still got it.
Make fun have fun again. Is Corey Lewandowski so out of touch he doesn't realize attending the Super Bowl is for rich folks and business moguls? You can't get anywhere near the stadium if you don't have tickets. And sorry, the cheapest seats are going to be for $19K. Yeah. Yeah.
That's why Bad Bunny's doing this one. It's not a show for his fans. It's to get his music to a whole new audience. He knows his fans are not going to go to the show, so thus they're not in danger by ICE. I mean, that's the whole reason he's agreed to do this. This is not a Bad Bunny show. No one's going to pay that money to see the halftime show. People go to because they can flex about how much money they can spend on a football game.
Right. Todd from Raleigh, are Nazis talking through a duck face now? Benny Johnson does love, you know, to mug for the camera a little bit.
Probably the mirror, too.
Yeah. 502 Drew, ever notice how obsessed these right wingers are with balls and units? They're having a lot of trouble suppressing those feelings, aren't they?
The amount of repression, self-repression going on.
It's 2003 all over again.
Yeah, it is wild.
I thought we broke through this shit.
But... I know.
I mean, Fuentes.
No comment.
I mean. Do you need to?
Yeah. We've heard some things. Tyler in Colorado, what's the over-under that Hegseth unironically owns a beer helmet? he definitely does. And he does not use beer in it. It's something stronger.
Puts it on unsuspecting women.
Right. Carl Dem Sock. Matt, you're probably looking for Take the Helm. Okay, we read that already.
Thank you.
Otto Sharpie said, I'm not interested in getting my kid in the military. I'm trying to get them the fuck out of this insane country. Emma Vergonia Land. Did Tom Brady write that part of Hegseth's speech? Yeah. Serge Acosta, great interview with Natasha. I'd love to see more attention on Zach Polanski of the Green Party. He's like British Mamdani, worth looking at his content. I don't know enough to say, but I would imagine that a British Mamdani would be associated with whatever Corbyn's building. Obligated affirmation. Unvaxxed people should be prioritized to in the front of the line for healthcare because they are exercising their individual choice as a selfish piggy consumer to disregard public health as a concept. No Sleep Till said, Emma, are you looking forward to commemorating October 7th? Puck drops on Rangers season, of course.
We have a great guest October 7th. I'm very excited about
that. I'm so glad that we were able to book this guest far in advance. So that's a little teaser for you. But yes, I'm trying to get excited about the Rangers. I don't want to get the.
I think they're going to win the cup this year.
No, they're not. They are not. They're rebuilding now after many painful playoff exits. And they've purged the team of like European young like the talent. I mean, it's time for let's be a bunch of hockey North American bros now. And I'm kind of not a fan of the energy of the team. But
they're doing hockey nationalism.
A little bit. Yeah, it's you know. Whatever. I don't want to get into it. Calling from a 503 area code. Who's this? Where are you calling from? 503.
Hi. Oh, is this me?
This is you. Who's this? Where are you calling from?
Hey, this is Carla from Oregon.
Who from Oregon? Sorry.
I want to talk about Carla from
Carla.
Carla.
Sorry.
From Oregon.
Sorry. Yes.
Yeah, I want to talk about trade unions. I'm a plumber here in Oregon. And, well, I'm like, sorry, I'm a little nervous. I will like call you guys all the time and you never answer, but I wasn't quite ready.
No, you're good.
But, like, basically, so I'm a plumber. I'm also a trans woman. Working in the trades as a woman in general is not, like,
easy.
Kind of tough.
Yeah.
It's an extremely male-dominated industry. And, like, I'm currently laid off trying to figure out my career path right now, and there is a union. And generally speaking, I, you know, I'm sure you guys would agree, like, I have a pretty pro-union mindset. But, like, the industry, and especially even, like, the unions is, like, just super mega, you know? Like, I mean, Oregon's a little bit more liberal, I guess, maybe than other places, but it's just, like, you know, the urban-rural divide, like, the company I work for, like, I'm from Portland, but, like, all my coworkers are, you know, they're cowboys or loggers. They're from the rural area. And so I've kind of carved a niche for myself at a company where, like, I'm, you know, I at least they're the assholes I know. But it hasn't been easy. Like, I was assaulted at one point. Like, my company basically just, you know, told me to stay out of his way. You know, that kind of shit.
Awful.
And yeah, I mean, but you know, I mean, it's like, I'm kind of stuck in this industry now though, because there's nothing I could just leave and go do where I'm going to have this kind of income. But I don't know. It's like, yeah, the problem, I just want to, I wonder if you guys could give me some, I think I maybe I've had a lot of misinformation about unions, but one of my biggest issues with joining the union here is that basically, when you sign up for the union, like, they kind of just move you around from employer to employer, not necessarily, like, at your discretion. And that's, like, just as a trans woman, I'm like, that sounds super sketch. Like,
well, look,
I mean, I said, at least these are the assholes I know, but, like, I just, getting moved to, like, a whole new shop with a whole bunch of strangers and not
yes.
knowing what I'm getting into. And not, like, I want to be able to choose where I work. And sometimes, I just don't know. I also sometimes think about starting my own company, but
I
can barely manage my own life and a business.
Well, Carl, let me just answer. So your question, first of all, I am not shocked, and I'm so sorry that you're experiencing harassment as a trans woman, as a woman, and in a male-dominated field like that, that is not surprising to me, especially if you are, you know, moving around workplaces and you don't necessarily have the protections that you need. It's hard for me to give constructive feedback about a union that I am not terribly familiar with. However, I think if my advice to you perhaps would be to speak to someone within the union and talk about your concerns.
That's kind of my next step. I got a email, but it's like, if you go on the website and just look at all of like the head guys, it's just like a long list of like old straight white dudes, you know? So it's like, I know I can like talk to people like this, but it's just like, it's kind of like, it doesn't feel welcoming from the get-go.
It's a whole
other
job
to do.
It's basically a whole other job that you have to do as on top of your actual job. And, you know, I mean,
right.
the broad trend that you observe, that is new with regards to how MAGA these sorts of unions are. We had Lainey Newman on for her book, Rust Belt Union Blues with Theta Scotch Bowl, Why Working Class Voters Are Turning Away from the Democratic Party. But they did actual research among how much sort of like right-wing bumper stickers you would see in Union Hall parking lots 25, 30 years ago versus now. And this is a long-term sort of outcome of the collapse of union power, in part because the Democrats, particularly the DLC with Bill Clinton and the Atari Democrats in the 80s, deciding we want to go after professionals and we're going to take that union block for granted, and it has deteriorated significantly to the point where you don't even get like civil rights type of messaging through those unions to the extent that you would have before. I still think, even though they're less hospitable, as like an avenue to both protect your own livelihood yep. and advance these issues, they're as good as anything going.
Appreciate the call. Thanks so
sure.
much.
Yeah. Thanks.
Calling from a 785 area code. Who's this? Where are you calling from? 785.
Hey guys, this is Tyler from Kansas, rural Kansas.
Tyler or Kyler?
T as in Tyler. Yeah.
Okay. That was stupid, but I thought I heard Kyler, and maybe I'm thinking about football. Right. Kyler Murray. Okay. Anyway. Tyler, sorry. What's on your mind?
Could have been him. Could have been the football player calling him. Who knew?
Could have been.
Yeah, it could have been. It could have gotten luckier than what I am.
No.
I'm a mailman in rural Kansas.
Hey, I love and our mailman. I think those are our boys in blue. We back our boys in blue.
Hell yeah.
The son of a letter carrier.
Amen. Amen. Public service announcement. Your dog does bite, and you should not let it out without a leash.
There
you
go.
Anyways, I have kind of a unique perspective on a lot of like the really relevant political issues like in today's climate, I feel like, because I grew up a Methodist in a small town, median age of 53 and climbing. It's like a retirement. You just go there to die. And mm-hmm. if you're there because you were born there, then you are 80 years old and you have a farm, a family farm or something like that, and you just essentially have that money. You don't want anything to change. You vote against any potential improvements with the school system or anything that would attract young people. We're just getting fiber internet through the rural grants actually like this year, and it's not even done yet. But one thing that I wanted to say is like, I feel like a lot of the young, especially white kids that are like, you know, in their teens or even a little older, and they were raised in the way I have been raised, I feel like there's no other alternative and there's no real avenue out of how your parents see things. So a lot of times, including with a lot of my friends, they just settle with the beliefs that they have and they don't think too much into it. Which is also why a lot of my friends stay like Christian, because it's easy. It's not uncomfortable. What is uncomfortable is thinking about other people and having the empathy to, you know, take social issues, seriously. And, I just want to talk about how, like, it's totally possible. I was, like, literally the most stereotypical, like, 4chan demon kid saying the worst things that you could possibly imagine. Like, you could imagine something right now that would make somebody throw up, and I probably had said that to somebody on the internet when I was 14 or 15.
Right.
Educate yourself for the love of God. Your parents are not your idols. Like you can see past them, and not everything that is on Newsmax and on Fox News that you're constantly absorbing, you shouldn't take that at face value.
I mean,
and once you look into
Yeah.
Go ahead.
No, I was saying it's a hopeful message. And do you mind expanding a little bit on how you reached that conclusion, like how you got there? I mean, being a postal worker, I'd imagine, like, you know, you work with different kinds of people, but you're in such a rural area as well. When you mentioned church, that's in many ways sometimes the only form of community that people have in rural parts of the country, and that's by design. And that can keep people in cycles of indoctrination or limit their thinking.
Yeah, absolutely. The two biggest groups, I would say, in my town and I guess in the surrounding region, because, you know, a lot of times in these rural areas, you think of something as a county because there are two or three ghost towns that have maybe a feedlot or, you know, a good sized farm with a couple silos in it. And that's the lifeblood of the entire town. So what happens a lot is that there are these community outreach programs. Like, there are a bunch of amazing things that, that these churches will do. You know, there's their thrift stores, nonprofit run by old ladies of the churches, potlucks, all community ran, you know, no cost or free will donation. And there is a, this funny hypocrisy that happens, like, as far as, you know, you think about, the free buses and things like that. And they're like, that is the dumbest thing I've ever heard. We're getting grants in our county, to have, sorry, my Midwest accent, kicks in sometimes, to have free buses in the area. And there are a bunch of people who are, like either not able to walk to their destination or they, need a safe escort because they are, you know, either injured or they have a disability. They get taken to work. They work as a grocery stocker or something else. Everybody's talking about DEI here. That I'll apply to that grocery store. I'll take that job. I could stock three times faster than those people. That, yeah. Why are they employing these people? Well, because they're a part of the community and their parents are in the churches. They, oh, well, that's this person's kid. That's a good kid.
Right, right.
But the other kids that have a disability, you know, elsewhere, they don't deserve that. They don't deserve the same treatment because I don't know them, and therefore they're not in my worldview.
And I think what you're describing is very like much what a lot of people say about their experiences with, you know, conservative communities like this, which is that unless it's right in front of their face, that's where the empathy ends.
Yeah, and people don't want to submit to brutal efficiency for capitalists themselves. If it's other people, well, that's just efficiency.
Yeah, exactly. And as far as, you know... Also, I just wanted to bring this up because it is something that's been on my mind very recently for no particular reason. When I worked at a hardware store in college, we got Trump and Joe Biden bobbleheads, and the Trump bobbleheads sold out in like two or three days. The Biden bobbleheads were still there after I left in 2 years afterwards. But I would say probably 85% of the old men that came in would go, I ought to buy that for target practice, you know, implying, obviously, the assassination of a president, which is really just horrible as Fox News and, you know, those news sites and things like that have reported how terrible it is to talk about the assassination of a president. I just don't, you know, I don't see any, I'm just talking about that for no particular reason.
Yeah. Appreciate the call. Any last things you want to say? Because, I mean, I really appreciate hearing your thoughts. It's very much indicative of, you know, the conditions we were talking about earlier.
Yep. Last thoughts. Watch movies. Read books.
Yep.
You know, talk to people. Go to college or go somewhere that isn't your hometown and meet humans, meet real humans. That's how I got out of it.
That's the antidote. Appreciate the call. Thanks so much, Tyler.
Thanks. Yes, with a T.
With a T, which makes sense. Thanks.
I mean, that the last point he makes there is why, for the last 20 or so years at least, there's been such a fixation on what's going on the college campuses and why it's being liquidated in front of our eyes right now and why we haven't wanted to fund it since the 80s. Like, that's why. That's exactly why. That's the only reason.
And it's also, it's also why costs are exploding. And you put people in a cycle of debt if they need to achieve, if they want to achieve that level of education, because if universities are just there to reproduce class, you can pay for it if you're in the class that is worthy of it. If you're not, go into a cycle of debt.
It's going to cost you.
And it's going to cost you. And when you're out, you have to likely take a job serving a capitalist to pay off the debt that you've accrued. So if you want to enter into the club, you play by the rules as well. All right, what should we do now? Any clips here? Sure. I mean, Zoran Mamdani is one of the, you know, only kind of beacons of hope we're looking to right now. So I was happy to see this last night. I've given up on watching The Bachelor, I gotta say. It's just gotten...
Oh, wow.
Yeah, I gave up a few years ago.
It's a huge part of your identity. Wow.
It's what? Definitely not a huge part of my identity.
I thought it was, too, honestly.
Yeah, it's how I describe Emma to people who've never met her. I'd be like, she loves right.
This Bachelor-obsessed yeah. girl.
I like reality TV and sometimes can get a little carried away. But I gave up a while ago. The golden era really was in college for me, and it's been on the decline since then. But still, the Golden Bachelor, I mean, people are into this. It's a better concept because all the Bachelor and the Bachelorette, it's like, okay, these 22-year-olds are not ready to get married or whatever. So they relaunched it with this new concept, the Golden Bachelor, which I haven't seen it, but it seems cute for older folks who want to find love. And Zoran aired an ad last night during The Golden Bachelor on ABC. This is just pretty great.
You deserve better. You deserve to be able to raise your family here, to be safe, to travel where you need to, free of costs and worry. You deserve someone who works as hard as you do, who thinks about you every second of the day. That's the kind of mayor I promise to be. New York, will you accept this rose?
Paid for by Zoran for NYC.
Oh,
it's
man.
So good. Yeah.
Yeah, that's really great. Could you imagine Cuomo doing something like that? And how
I was just thinking
what it'd be.
He wouldn't ask. He wouldn't ask if you could accept this rose. He would just shove it in your hand and grab your ass.
Here's an AI recreation of you accepting my rose.
Oh my God. Can we pull that up? Thank you. Thank you for reminding us, Binder, because...
Yeah, got to hit that one, too, back to back, right? These are their two latest ads. You got the Mamdani ad and then the Cuomo ad. And I think showing those one after the other really gives you a good idea who each of these guys are.
Yeah, we report, you decide.
Exactly right.
This is a real, like, which way Western man moment. So like, let the people decide.
I'll just point out that there is a large amount of people in the creative industries in New York, and here is the guy running for the mayor using AI.
Oh.
Cuomo. And I could pretend to do a lot of jobs, but I know what I know, and I know what I don't know. And I do know how to make government work. I'll hire 5,000 new cops to partner with local community groups and keep our families safe. And we'll get the homeless off the streets and into the help they desperately need.
Oh.
There are a lot of jobs I can't do, but I'm ready to be your mayor on day one.
So my favorite part of this is that Cuomo, he doesn't really live in New York City. He claims residence at his daughter's, $7,000 a per month apartment in order to run for this office desperately still after losing the primary by double digits. They must have just had one shot of him by the bridge. That's the Manhattan Bridge, right?
I bet that's green screen, too.
Yeah, I don't think he's even there.
Oh, fair enough. And then, okay, so there you go. They got
through AI. He looks like Danny Aiello. When they cut to him in, that does not look like him at all.
I know. I know. He's doing the sitcom shrug. They just don't have enough footage of him in the city, is what it feels like.
Also, they're using AI. And, why would you think that's okay to do?
I know. I know. Go ahead, guys.
I mean, the whole concept behind that ad is... It would have been I think I saw
Democrats' Twitter make this point, and how, like, you know, they could have went to the store, went to, like, the Spirit Halloween's everywhere right now. They could have bought a few costumes, used some green screen, and he could have had, like, this endearing ad showing him dressed up in different things. But that's even too much for him to do. Like,
right.
He's too, like, this is the laziest campaign ever. He just wants to meet his donors privately. I mean, look at the shots in that ad that actually are Cuomo. It's just him outside. That's the, like, and the concept is everything with AI. Like, you can't make a concept without the AI component, because Cuomo doesn't want to do any of the work of actually, let's go in front of a green screen and I'll wear like a classic, like, train conductor hat to be funny, but it'll be cute. People might like it. No, he's not that type of guy. Well, whereas he came up with him and his people came up with this ad that's endearing. It doesn't require much of anything, but it just shows how creative and how thoughtful you are with actually what you want to do. Cuomo's ad doesn't work without the AI, and that's just taking jobs from people here in the U.S. Like you mentioned, especially New York, creative capital.
Yeah.
You know, that's a great point, Matt. And I think it also, like, highlights a kind of funny symbolism in how he chose to do that ad, where he's even saying, like, I could do all this work. I could do these jobs. I could be what you guys are. But instead, I'm going to hire more cops. And then I'm going to harass the homeless.
And I'm
That's
the boss.
My promise to you. Yeah, Andrew Cuomo. Like, it really does speak to the kind of campaign he's running and the kind of mayor he would be. You know, I could do the work to make society a better place, but I'm going to just hire some more cops and harass the homeless. Never I'm going to give the homeless homes so that they have homes. It's always, I'm going to get them off the streets so you don't have to see them. That's
what
the kind of
language. What they desperately need.
They're begging for it. And Anders Lee also pointed this out of the Pod Down America and Vanquished podcast, which I've appeared on before. In my experience, I would suck at every job at this company except the head of it, end quote, doesn't do too well in job interviews.
Right. I like, and also even the one, right, where he dropped, can you play the part where he drops the curtain?
Well,
this is supposed to be, this, when we're talking about, like, a middle finger to the arts, he's both using AI art, AI stuff to run this ad, and then is also clearly messing up this, like, Broadway performance.
And I know what I don't know. And,
who let him backstage?
Well, I mean, I do have to say, to Anders' point, like, that's usually true, except for when the head of the company is your dad, which is kind of why Cuomo is running too, right? Where that's usually true, except for when, like, you're the son of the boss or the son of someone high up in the company. Then it's like, oh no, that's a perfectly reasonable thing to say.
Right.
You go through your whole life and you haven't developed a single skill besides the thing you were born into. You're pathetic.
Remember when he called Zoran a Nepo baby?
Yeah. They tried that. And he's not even... Zoran isn't even in the field. If Zoran was a filmmaker...
Yes.
You could call him a Nepo baby.
Yes, or a professor like his dad.
Yeah. All right. Well, I mean, Cuomo is, like, a proficient sex pest, so that's something that he's done on his own.
That is an accomplishment. I don't think Mario had at least a dozen women accuse him of sexual misconduct.
Did he ever sue women for gynecological records?
At least. All right, guys, let's take one more call here. This will be the final call, most likely.
Every American will soon receive their own MedBed card.
Calling from a 978 area code. Who's this, where are you calling from?
Hi, this is Kylie. I'm in Boston.
Kylie in Boston, what's on your mind?
First of all, shout out to Tyler, because it's funny, I also wanted to talk about, my husband is a mailman here in Boston, and I'm hesitant to even, like, I've wanted to call in the past and get more detailed about it, but his office is literally, like, run like the mafia, so I'm, like, even kind of nervous to talk too much about it. But since you guys were talking about, like, music and cultural things, there is one thing I kind of wanted to point out. You guys saw one battle after another, right?
I did, but Brian hasn't, so we really, really don't want neither spoilers.
I haven't seen it either.
Oh, my God.
Me either.
Damn.
Can you not? I don't want to spoil it for the audience either. I'm sorry.
I'm going on Saturday.
He's going
no,
Saturday.
That's okay.
Yeah.
That's okay. I just wanted to point out that there is just something that really underscores how emotionally stunted some of these, like,
yes,
tough
yes
guys are. I think you'll know what I'm talking about. Yeah,
yes,
like,
I do. Don't go
don't
further.
Have any...
Yes.
I won't. I
no,
won't.
No. Okay.
I won't. But I wanted to say that there's a lot of that in his office. Like, he has a chronic illness, and even when he told someone he was going to submit, you know, like something saying he needed to work fewer hours because of that, he was threatened that he was going to get fired. And I even filed a complaint about that. And thankfully that person, I don't think he encountered him again, but anyway, there's a just a really laughable, like, macho thing that completely, you know, God, man, it's really
you just
hard
have
to talk.
Kyla, you've
got to
call back next week. I think that's the grace period. Okay.
Okay. All right. I thought you guys were saying I was so excited for you guys to see it.
We'll talk about it next week. But
you know, like Tyler said, it's important to watch, you know, movies and have any culture, because these people don't have any culture is the thing, and they don't have any taste. And that's the sort of thing that they fall back on.
But it's not because they don't watch this stuff, though. Like, you have to understand that. It's not like just like, oh, if they all of a sudden
they don't get it.
Yeah.
Like, they just refuse to get it. They refuse. They can't understand.
Well, another Leo movie, like Wolf of Wall Street, is the prime example. Yes. All those conservatives watch that and they think it's aspirational. It's insane. Yeah. It's insane. I mean,
It's Taxi, the same with, like, American Psycho.
Yeah, Taxi Driver. They don't understand that.
They're like, I'm Patrick Bateman. And it's like, that's why you can't remake that, because Christian Bale's entire MO for doing that movie was to, like, make fun of these people.
Yes.
And to lay bare how, you know, the moral and cultural bankruptcy that was there, and that this I think this movie, One Bad Lesson, does the same thing of, like, that ultimately that there's, like, nothing, it's hollow. These people, their goals.
They were getting mad at woke Superman. I mean, it doesn't get any woke Superman. I mean, like, what? Like, they just don't. They just
like the person who's supposed to help people. Like, really gay that he helped.
The literal person from another world who came here illegally.
Appreciate it.
Sounds woke.
Thanks so much.
Thank you. I will call back.
Call back. Yes.
They just don't. They just refuse to. I mean, speaking of another Leonardo DiCaprio movie, they love to use that image of Leonardo DiCaprio as a slave owner in the Django Unchained as their, like, reaction image.
Look, you're
the slave owner in this scenario. Good job portraying yourself as that. Like, they just don't.
Fiction is hard. Fiction is hard. Media literacy is hard. I think it's gotten a lot harder recently as people's ability to determine fact from fiction has degraded. And this is going to sound elitist, but I think people should have to pass a test before they're allowed to see movies.
Yeah,
before they're allowed to engage in, before you're like, being able to read fiction is a privilege, not a right. There is no place in the Constitution that said that Americans are guaranteed the right to enjoy fiction. I think you should have to pass a test, because people can't tell the difference between fact and fiction anymore, and it's leading to, you know, bad things. And so, if you want to see a movie, you should have to be able to pass a test. I think the same should be true about AI. If you use AI for too long, it should ask you if you can tell a difference between fact or fiction. If you say the wrong thing, like I said, like a reverse void comp test. If you say the wrong thing, it just kicks you off. They send the Blade Runner to your house.
I mean, we were watching that, like, that Pete Hegseth clips earlier from his speech with the military. How many visions, how the conservative mind views the military, how much of that is taken from, like, the imagery they see from war movies, and how they don't even realize that so many war movies are actually critical
of what's being portrayed in them, but they can't understand that. They view, oh, you made a movie about that? That means you endorse it. That means you like it. You're not being critical about the thing you're portraying because they can't understand that. So that's when they come away with this idea that they got to be exactly what it looked like in these war movies, and that's a positive.
Yep.
A sergeant once told me that men don't read fiction.
Hell yeah.
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 He was admonishing me for reading.
I mean, that's all like
these bad thoughts.
Well, see, the thing about reaction—that's
feelings.
But the issue is, as people get more reactionary, and this is a thing I truly believe is the case, as people get more reactionary, they privilege their experiences over objective, like factual, like science that other people have like discerned. And so for people like that, having seen something or read something, even if it's explicitly fictional, takes on increased realness because it's something that they saw. Like some people feel like an episode of SVU is just as real as the news because they watched it. And that's becoming like increasingly more common in America. Yeah. And so like we just have to contend with the fact that it's made people easier to scam, but it's every day now that people can't tell the difference between like a movie on television or like, you know, the news.
Oh, people just read something on social media now from any fucking rando and they think, oh, that's the news because this rando said it. It's amazing. There's no media literacy at all, whether it be fiction, nonfiction, anything. It's just incredible.
It's pumped to the top of their feeds and privileged by the blue check or whatever. And it's all been the algorithm. I mean, that's what it's been is since like it's been, you know.
China doing it to us.
A timeline, right? Like timelines used to be like a way that you would scroll through posts as they came out. And now everything is fed to you based on your past pattern of like what you linger on and what you engage with previously. And
what advertisers want to get to you.
Right. And I truly do think that like this urban crime panic that the Republicans are so reliant on has been aided and abetted by the tech overlords who believe in things like what Gil Duran has reported on with Peter Thiel, the network state. Cities need to be purged of like the homeless and leftists, and this should basically be a semi-corporate autonomous zone that's run by like Silicon Valley overlords. I mean, attacking cities in this way is very beneficial for their project, and they have aided and abetted it with their social media platform.
They started in San Francisco, where all those venture capitalists are. Like you have Balaji Srinivasan literally saying, we're doing tech Zionism here. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, corny as hell. I'm turning on the voicemail. I'm sorry, guys. No more time for calls. We're going to read some IMs and get out of here. Richard Marxist. Medbeds. Thank you. MPG, lack of critical thinking is nothing new. Just ask Jonathan Swift or Vladimir Nabokov. I don't know if I'm cultured enough to know what that
is. It's not new, but it does wax and wane. And we are in a... And I don't normally like to catastrophize about media panics and stuff like that. But, I mean, and it is a similar sort of playbook used by the 19th century press to focus on salacious crimes of that you can put on other ethnicities. It's also like the 90s where local news would just go, like say, hey, cops, police department, what stories do you have for us today for tonight? But it's worse now. It's definitely like people are less critical of it than I think they were 20 years ago.
Wyoming Ryan, books used to be locked up for a long part of human history, and there was probably a good reason for it. I don't know about that. I think you're joking.
That's not our position.
Unless you're talking about the Bible.
The books aren't dangerous. Like, you need critical thinking.
Beans and Toast. Look at any movie where a character has an internal monologue about the variations of the color white is movie that is too deep for conservatives' understanding. I may have read that incorrectly.
Who did we cover that was scared of a story or a podcast because he was afraid he wouldn't be able to, it would change his mind? Oh, Weinstein.
Oh, yeah, he was afraid of, what was the story that was going around? About
some podcast series he was afraid to listen to because he didn't think he would be strong enough to resist the information.
His foundations and critical thought aren't strong enough.
But that's amazing to say.
But is that not just like the secularized version of like Christian evangelicals not seeing like modern horror movies because they think it makes them more susceptible to like demonic possession? Like that's what I mean. Like things have clearly been eroded to the point where stuff like that is more common.
Future reactionary. It's hilarious. Y'all are so confused. So many shit bands that I look at as one and the same. You don't see Nickelback, Creed, Theaters Down, Stained, POD, etc. in the same place at the same time, do you?
They're all the same. They're all the same.
Theo Bomb.
They all sound the same.
They do. There's a clip of Mario Cuomo on CNN as 9/11 was unfolding, and it he says, "I hope we find out why these terrorists did this, because you'll never be able to out security and out police these kinds of attacks. You need to get to the reasoning and prevent it from the start." The first time I heard that as an adult, I was genuinely impressed with someone having the sound mind to say that as the towers were falling. Clearly, none of that wisdom was passed along to his sons.
No.
No.
It's almost like you can't do these things in a hereditary fashion.
Right. Right.
Is it a leadership gene?
Yeah. it's almost like lived experience and that kind of thing is a little more important than genetics. Ryan from the Lou. What's up, gang? Just wanted to welcome my new baby girl born this morning at 3:19 a.m.
Congratulations.
Should name it Nelly.
What? Nelly?
Nelly from St. Louis.
Ah. Go ahead.
I was going to ask, like, Furtado or Country Grammar, but you answered.
Country Grammar.
Into the world with the rest of the Majority Report. The fight never gets more real than when you have a child, let alone a second girl. Please, everyone, keep up the good fight and find that thing you're passionate about. And Emma, I'm very happy to hear you, your strong message on the regular. It's truly inspiration for a now two-time girl dad. Well, that's very sweet, Ryan.
Hi,
you
have two girls too. Two girl dad represent in the house.
Double girl dad. Ernie Burns, poet. Look at QAnon conspiracies. They're all from the plots of 70s, 80s, and 90s B movies. There's no distinction from fantasy and fact. That's exactly right. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Five more. Autistic Mandalorian says, my brother and I watched Andor with our parents, and my Republican dad really enjoyed it and seemed to get all at the time, but it just doesn't break through the cognitive dissonance, and Republicans would rather outsource their critical thinking to Fox News and Daily Wire. Yeah. Gregorius Christ, in a Halloween miracle, I saved a little black kitty yesterday. He's probably a month old. Any name suggestions? Suggestions.
Ooh. Salem, yeah, that's a good one. I like that.
Salem's great, yeah.
From Sabrina the Teenage Witch.
Uh-huh, yeah.
yeah, I got it.
Yes. It's such a shame she turned out to be like a God's Not Dead
She's in the best one, though. She's in the best one, the one with like Ray Wise.
What, is that the one in the courtroom?
Yeah.
Okay, yes. Right. Yes. She's the teacher that Satan, aka the ACLU, is going after, right? Yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, gotcha. For saying like Martin Luther, and now it's all coming back to me, saying Martin Luther King, calling him a reverend. Oh.
No, she straight up encouraged a kid to pray. And they tried. There was really like not to the point where I think she should be fired, but that is what she did. But they tried to pretend like it was something like completely
innocuous,
unrelated to that.
Yeah,
innocuous. Yeah.
Dark Soul, I stand with Matt's medbed obsession. I can't not think about it now or joke about it when I'm gaming with my friends and see anything remotely similar.
It's amazing to see this come back. I was covering this many, many years ago when it was just a fringe, even in the QAnon space, it was a fringe QAnon belief, and now Trump's brought it into the mainstream years later. It's amazing.
Every American will soon receive their own medbed card.
Can't wait.
But it does beg the question. Like the whole thing. This was originally was that this was the idea that these med beds existed when Trump was no longer in power, and that the government was holding this back from us, this cure to all of our ailments, where you just go onto this med bed and it just fixes your cancer or whatever disability or disease or sickness you have. But now Trump's here. Why isn't he rolling out the med beds to everybody? What's going on? They don't question that, though. It's very weird.
That's the point. Is there right around the corner?
Done it yet. You think that would be the priority, right? Day one, med beds for everyone. It's almost a year in now.
Med beds come to those who wait.
They're waiting for ICE to finish their job is probably what they're going to say.
Yeah, we don't want an illegal. Yeah. Imagine if an illegal immigrant got into a med bed. It'd be chaos.
Too powerful. You'd never get him out.
I'm just picturing some guy so scared of an illegal immigrant getting into a med bed.
Sir, the med beds are the illegals have found the med beds.
It's like when a villain gets a hold of like the weapon that the hero has.
This is the one thing we didn't want to happen.
They're too powerful now. There's no stopping
them. It's a joke. You guys think it's a joke, but soon we'll all be speaking Spanish. We'll all be hablando español, and you know.
It's made the migrant too powerful.
They're too healthy.
All right, three more. Lydia Rose, will the med beds provide transgender for everyone?
he's gonna convert the med beds into trans beds.
Yeah. Former libertarian, it's great when people get better, but prevention is so much easier than healing. We need to keep today's kids from following a 4chan type path. No phones in school, no social media for kids, clear public messaging on the addictive potential, amongst other things. I need to look more into that because I know that I don't know about no phones in school stuff. I mean, I worry about things like mass shootings, and I know that there's been some like other ideas, like kind of dumb phones that maybe are safer as opposed to like having all the access to this kind of stuff. But I don't have time to get into that. We're final IM of the day. Dark Soul, illegal immigrants and med beds is literally the plot of that movie with Matt Damon, Elysium. I haven't seen it, but
I forgot about it. I saw it a while ago. I think you might be right.
I mean, I'm trying to. What is the plot then?
I think it's that there's like whatever planet they're on, maybe it's Earth, is like dying, and they're taking all the like the rich and like the privileged people to another planet, but everyone else is going to be stuck here on Earth.
Something like that.
Yeah.
Well, that's pretty amazing. All right, guys. Thanks so much. Appreciate you all. We will see.
Oh, it's
tomorrow.
Called. Oh, it's even called a med bay where they fix them, where they like fix people's health issues.
Of course, it's just copy pasted.
Yeah, of course, the med bed conspiracist just plagiarized a middling Matt Damon movie from 2013. All right, guys, thanks so much. We'll see you tomorrow.
It might take all the strength I got to get to where I want, but I know somehow I'm gonna get there. I wasn't looking when I just got caught between the truth and the light bulb. But finding out won't make me feel any better. Yeah, I know. Meds are gonna kick in, and my pilot light shining bright. I guess I'm where the choice is made, for the option where you don't get paid, for the road that bends before it finally breaks you. I guess I'm where I lost my drive between the 101 and the 5. Know how far the detour takes you. Yeah, I know the clock is ticking, but the meds are